Hello, this is William Fink, and this is the Christigenia Open Forum program. It is Monday, June 21st. The year's half over already. It's incredible. 2010. I'd encourage anybody that wants to talk or say anything to right-click their name and ask to talk on the menu, and your microphone will be turned on. So far, we have Matt Dogg and Victor Switzer. How you doing, guys?
Great. Yourself?
That good? That good, huh? What's going on today? I don't know what interesting email I got today. I tried to avoid it today. I got tied up doing things all day. I tried to do some work on Eli's site, and it didn't quite go as expected, so I patched it up with a Band-Aid. Pilgrim has posted the on the swift.christigenia.org site. Pilgrim has posted all of William Gale's church magazines, the Identity Church magazine on the menus at the Swift site, and that stuff should be interesting because it'll, as Pilgrim has correctly said, it is good material to have available if for no other reason than as a record of the times and the state of the identity movement during the period in question. And we have Rudolph to thank for that, and Pilgrim. Rudolph is actually the proprietor of ucoy.christigenia.org, and he supplied us with that material. So that's the news at Christigenia today. That's all the news at Christigenia today. I don't agree with everything that Swift said. Of course, neither do many of the people here, but we owe him a debt of gratitude, and I think that his work is worth preserving so that we know where not to go and so that we know where we came from. That's the way I look at it, right? Maybe not. Yes, 8-Day Woman. Rudolph is yeah, the UCOI site. He pursues that stuff. And yes, these Swift and Gale and Compere had a big influence on early identity learning. And we owe them a debt of gratitude, and their work is probably worth keeping. Swift gets into a lot of syncretism and they get all caught up in the Cold War and the politics of the times, but I would probably take the same route myself if I was doing this back then. I can't get, you know, none of us could say that we would be any better with the information that they had at the time. How you doing, son of a miss? Well, what else is happening in the news?
I was fixing the war in Iran, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's the rumors, right? I mean, the Jews have been beating the drum for a war in Iran for 5 years now. That they want to use America like the whores that we are to destroy all of their enemies. And they already control us and have destroyed us from the inside out, right?
Yeah, because we're one of their enemies.
That they used up the English Empire and the flower of English manhood. For 100 years, they used it to fight their wars, their wars of commerce, so they could loot and pillage the resources of the world. And now these past 100 years, it's the American, the flower of American youth. They're doing the same thing with.
Yeah, have you heard recently about the resources in Afghanistan that just came out from the Pentagon, I think, how there's like $1 trillion worth of natural resources in Afghanistan. Funny thing that we're already there.
Well, I think they've always probably known that, right?
Exactly.
Victor, if you're saying anything, I'm sorry. I can't hear you. You probably turned the sensitivity down on your microphone too far. If anybody wants to talk, right-click your microphone, and you're welcome to say something. This is an open forum program, and I can't do it by myself. That's the way these programs are. MacDog, what kind of fried squash did you eat today?
It was yellow summer squash.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's the first squash we'll get here. Not for another 6 to 8 weeks, though.
Really? I figured there'd be at least some squash on now, but...
Oh, up here? No way. It just went to the ground 3 weeks ago. I mean, it's usually at least 8, 10 weeks before you can eat it. Before it gets big.
My sweet corn's about ready to come off.
It's barely knee-high here. That's an old saying my grandmother reminded me of the other day, that it had to be knee-high by the 4th of July. Hello, Ken. Getting a little feedback on you.
Hello, Bill. You know, I had it shut off while you were telling me that.
Yeah, I swear I'm not making it up, Kent.
I know you're not. It's just so funny how this works. But
yeah, I like squash too. Butternut's my favorite.
Okay, now it's lighting up. I don't know what that was about. My first crop of squash just died. And I had to plant
wow.
some more. And mine is not the only one around here that's dying. It's the heat, the drought, and I think it's just a rash of bad seed.
That could be. Well, last year I lost all my peppers and all my tomatoes.
Is that better?
Yes. Well, your light's not lighting up when I talk anymore, so it's fine. Thank you. So what's going on? How was the, did anybody listen to the programs with Eli? The Isaiah program, the Ephesians, well, Philippians program. The Philippians program Eli rushed through on me, and it became 1 and 2 Thessalonians, too.
No, I downloaded them, and I'm going to listen to them tomorrow while I'm in the auto shop, probably all day.
All right. I think Eli is really trying to compress these last few books of Paul on me. Well, we sat to do Philippians Saturday, and we also did the first 2 chapters of 1 Thessalonians, which I never expected to get to, but we did. So I got to tease Eli about rushing me.
Is he trying to get through the New Testament really quick?
Well, yeah. I mean, we were, you know, it took, I was looking back at my archives today, and it took 3 programs to get through Colossians, and it took 3 or 4 programs to get through Ephesians. But we did Philippians and half of 1 Thessalonians in 1 program. I don't know what's up with that. You think he's in a rush or something? Joe Pennsylvania just said that, according to Eli, the time is short, so we got to hurry, I guess. Nah, I mean, the programs are good, but I'd just rather go a little slower, that's all.
Yeah.
Without putting people to sleep. I just felt the last few weeks Eli's been in a rush on me, that's all. Maybe it's just my perception.
Well, you know, you are not just talking. You're making an audio record of an academic examination of these books, and hopefully they'll stand the test of time. Hopefully people will be listening to them 30 or 50 years from now. Maybe they'll be hallmarks of Christian identity theology. Who knows?
Well, that's what I'm hoping for. I mean, it's. I don't want to sound, you know, like I'm making more of myself than I should be, but that's what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping that my, but I'm also hoping that my work is taken and built on by others and improved. So that's
sure.
What we should hope for, right?
Right. Yeah,
Pilgrim's saying, no, we can't possibly have 30 or 50 years of this left.
Well, you never know.
You're right. You never know. What is he thinking? I could hear the sense of alarm in her typing.
Pilgrim, we'll touch base 30 years from now, and we'll see. Okay. I mean, I hope it's not, but I burned out donut.
Thanks, Joe. All I'm trying to do is show that there's a scholarly foundation to Christian identity without following all the nut jobs off into left field. That's my goal, anyway. I may not succeed, but it seems to me that a lot of people that try to show to get, you know, scholarship and identity just jump off a bridge somewhere or another. Go off after some nutty doctrine or something. Some wacky idea. I'm trying to avoid that, that's all. Guys late in their careers that start denying 2C line or denying there's a devil like Sheldon Emery and certain other people. I don't know, it's nuts. 30 years from now we will be in the CI nursing home.
Well, who knows, maybe 30 or 50 years from now we'll be sitting around the feet of Yahshua and he'll be saying, Bill, you got this wrong. Bill, you got that wrong. No, Bill, you were wrong here. You were sort of right there.
Well, right. And that's, we always have to remind ourselves and be introspective. That's extremely important. That is important. I do agree. And I'm probably wrong about a few things. And I'm sure that's true.
So
right, Joe, just to make sure we're there, right? Just to want to be there. That's all that's important.
So I saw something on the news. I think it was on the Drudge Report. Obama is wanting to have his finger on the internet button so he can cut it off anytime he wants.
Yes.
Big surprise there.
In case of emergency, in case the government needs the resources, there's a big problem with that.
Well, they're touting it as preemptive measures against terrorist organizations that recruit over the internet. And, you know, an incredible amount of internet traffic goes through the United States. So from their perspective, it's not a bad idea. Okay.
Well, right. I'm not saying it's a good idea. We'll use all the power that we give them.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about that. But I'm saying you really, really, really want to control internet communications. You want to control the United States servers.
Well, I'm sure that behind the scenes they probably already do. I don't know how it's structured today, but I know before I went to prison, there were only 8 servers that were the backbone of the Internet. And most of those servers, all of those servers were either in military installations or universities. And they were named A through H. Servers A through H were the backbone of the internet, and they were all on a fiber loop between Washington and the Mississippi at that time. I don't think any of the first ones were out west. I might be mistaken, but I think all the main internet servers were in the eastern half of the country. But I might be wrong about that.
I'm with MacDog. Surely one of them was in Colorado. Surely.
Boxar might know more about the history of the internet than me, but it doesn't matter. There were only 8 servers that were the backbone of the internet, and they were on the fiber loop, and those 8 servers were. And I remember when that trunk line went private, MCI was the first company with the contract to run that. They won that bid from the Defense Department. And actually, it wasn't even the Defense Department at that time. It was turned over to the Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Sciences or something like that in Washington.
Right. Hey, Joe in Pennsylvania just brought up something in the chat talking about the White House administration suing Arizona over their anti-illegal law. Have you read recently what's come out about that?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Senator K.Y.L. Kyle, he's one of the U.S. senators from Arizona, McCain being the other one. He was holding a town hall meeting somewhere in Arizona, and people were quizzing him pretty hard about it. Now, he claims he went and talked to Obama personally, wanting to know what the deal was. What did Obama have against this Arizona law? And Obama, according to him, said that if they seal the border, if they have an active roundup of illegals, then there would be less support for a comprehensive immigration amnesty bill that would come through Congress. So basically it's politics. You understand what I'm saying there?
Right. Of course it's politics. They should seal the damn border, and we don't want any comprehensive amnesty bills, right?
No, because that's all it is amnesty. It's amnesty for millions of illegals who are already here. And that's what he's wanting. He's wanting future Democrats, generations of future Democrats.
Of course. Well, I wrote 3 or 4 years ago, Immigration and Problem and Biblical Prophecy, that it was inevitable that we had an amnesty. And I stand by it. Either Congress is going to do nothing and continue to do nothing, or we'll have an amnesty. Either way, we're stuck with these illegals until Yahshua Christ decides that we don't need them anymore.
I agree. But the White House issued a denial of that conversation, said it never took place.
Of course they did. They don't want to be seen playing politics with the aliens. That's anathema to both liberals and conservatives. Well, we're stuck with them. I seriously doubt that that anybody in this nation is going to get the backbone to try sending them home. Even though on several occasions that's been done before.
Eisenhower.
It was done under Eisenhower. The Jew. The first
Swedish
openly Jewish president.
The Swedish Jew, as they called him in West Point, yeah.
Yeah, he was openly Jewish. It was just kept out of the media.
Well, wasn't Eisenhower part black, too?
I don't believe that, but if he was part Jewy, he was technically part black. I have no doubt. Nah, he has the pug nose and some features that may be led to believe that he was a mulatto, but he wasn't really a mulatto. I would have a hard time believing that. As we know, mulattoes. But Jews have basically the most Jews, I would say, have the elements of every race in them. That's how much they've mixed with every other race, the Arabs and the Khazars, the Mongols. Hello, Joe. Hello.
Hi, Bill. How you doing? Hey, Victor.
Great.
Hey, MacDog. Hey, everybody.
Hi, Joe.
I also saw on Fox tonight they were showing about five white guys in military gear and guns, and O'Reilly was starting to babble on about how no goods is going to come from this. And how it's, implying that it's wrong for someone to take charge and go down the border and try to stop the illegals. So I guess they're going to get on that again with Fox.
Sword Brother was asking me the other day if he should go down there as a volunteer to guard the border. I told him any of those volunteers going down there to guard the border, first time one of them shoots a Mexican, the media is going to hang them.
Yep.
They don't stand a chance. And
they
prosecutors are going to hang them, too.
They should just get 200 guys to go down there and just do the opposite and say, hey, we're here to give you safe passage. Come on, all of you. Welcome, everybody.
Yeah, an army escort right into some gully out in the middle of nowhere.
Army escort right into Dianne Feinstein's house.
No, because anytime you stand up for this issue, you're going to just be made the evil, horrible person. And so I almost feel like saying, come on in, flood everything.
Right, and if you're caught in an act of violence against one of these illegal aliens, you're going to get hung. The media is going to hang you, and so are the feds.
Right, so that's why I'm saying, I would say do the opposite, what they don't expect from the militias. Just come down and tell them all, come on in.
Well, they're already doing that. I can assure you there's no border down here. You know?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's the surrender of a nation.
I mean, it's crazy for people to think you're going to, you're going to resist this and stop their will from occurring, whatever they have planned for our country. And anything we do is just going to make us look bad and target us.
Well, we have no political solution, that's for sure. And we shouldn't expect one. And what we should do is stop dealing with their damn banks and stop dealing... buying their damn movies and all the other crap that we buy and enriching our enemies. And that's our biggest problem.
Yeah,
people. That they can all piss and moan. Yeah, you know, how many rednecks I spoke to in my life that insisted on drinking Budweiser or Miller beer, and I tell them about how Budweiser endorses this and that, gives money to anti-gun groups, gives money to pro-gay groups, and they'd still go out and buy Budweiser.
That's right.
We're our own worst enemy. It's all the time. It's our entire race.
You tell that good old boy. You tell that good old boy. That's how I know you're gay, is because you drink Budweiser, right?
Well, right, but they don't want to listen. We've supported all the corporations that have done this to us year in and year out. It's not the things that we have to do that hurt us. It's the things that we do voluntarily and do more of that hurt us.
Right, right. Well, that's why the divorce rate's so high, and everybody's in, got a 30-year mortgage, and they're in debt, and got credit cards that they're hocked up in, and they're losing their jobs, and most Christians couldn't tell you, really 5 minutes worth of what Christianity's all about, and I mean, it's all going to come home to roost, don't you think?
Well, it's absolutely going to come home to roost. There's no doubt.
I mean, however much pain it takes, and definitely all the people down here on the border flooding across the border. And let me tell you, there is just really, really no effort to do anything down here on the border whatsoever, other than you got a border patrol and they've got guards and trucks and cars driving around just to make it look good so you have something to film. But other than that, they don't do anything. I've even seen, when I went down, I used to do that Minuteman stuff, and we'd call it in and they'd come over there and look at it and just turn around, get back in their car and drive off. That's really what they do, and go, okay, thank you very much. We'll take it from here. And then they get in their car and drive off. That's your government for you, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's crazy. And it's useless. Unless you're an illegal alien looking for a handout. Or a Chinese immigrant, or an Indian, or a Pakistani immigrant. Hello, RP. Hello, Gerald. So what else is happening? No questions, no debates, no what's up with this or that. The next two issues of the New Ensign electronic magazine will be posted tonight, I hope. If not tonight, then first thing in the morning on the New Ensign website. I encourage everybody to download the PDFs and share them far and wide. I have them in front of me. I just got to get them uploaded and onto the internet. There goes Joe again. Playing the shark. RP, nobody sent you to Hayes. You would have had to double-click on it to get there. If you double-click on a channel, you're going to end up there. Otherwise, I could drag you there, but I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't send you to hell, RP. Okay, if anybody wants to talk, right-click your name, and I'll turn your microphone on. We got to get Clifton hooked up with the microphone. He's probably snarling at me right now for saying this, right? But it would be great to have him here once in a while. it's good to have him listening, but it would be great to hear from him.
Can you manage?
What's that, Michael?
I was just wondering, can you get him on?
He doesn't have a microphone, I don't think. I'm not
oh,
sure.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Or he doesn't have a headset. That's it.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
Well, they're only like, what, 15, 20 bucks?
Yeah, but he goes to the store once or twice a month, I think. He doesn't get out too often.
I'm very happy to send him one.
You can go to newegg.com and order you one. They'll send it. They'll come and knock on your door and hand it to you.
I'm sure he'll get one sooner or later. Just picking on him.
I would be very happy to send him one.
He's going to think I'm putting him on the spot now. Kent, what do you know about Ben Klassen? Convince me that he's not a Jew. I mean, you started to last week, but I'd like to know more about that. I haven't had a chance to do any reading.
You mean I started to convince you?
Well, I mean, I take it. I trust your judgment. So it at least makes me think about it, right?
Okay. Well, just reading his stuff.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just reading his stuff. I mean, he was somewhat of an inventor, so that puts him in our camp. And he just seemed to write sincerely. I couldn't even finish his book. It wound up so stupid. But his life story sounded interesting to me, and I think it was sincere. I think he really is a Mennonite.
All right. I'll try to research it when I get the chance. There were just so many people coming over here from Soviet Russia and starting new religions and new cults. That I just have a hard time separating him from the pack,
Yeah, I don't blame him.
There is another a white nationalist saw my remarks about Ben Klassen in the Christigenia Forum. And he wrote to me with a strong appeal to reconsider him. And that was back a couple of months ago. He was civil about it. He wasn't an asshole about it. He was civil about it.
What did he ask you to think about Ben Klassen?
Well, that he wasn't a Jew, that's all.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think he was just one of ours, but kind of a nut.
Well, I mean, that's theoretically possible, but I would just like to know more before I made my mind up. I was hoping you had something that maybe you didn't get to get in there last week, you know? A lot of times you talk about things and the next day you think, oh, why didn't I mention this or that or whatever?
Yeah. No, all I have is, you know, his writing and stuff.
I have heard it said, or I've read it said, rather, that for about 20 years when he was running that church, he caught virtually no flack from the ADL or any other Jewish watchdog group. Is that true? To your knowledge?
To my knowledge, he barely got the thing off the ground, and then he was dead shortly thereafter. I didn't know that anything ever came of that thing that he built.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, there are this Worldwide Church of the Creator. Yeah, this Church of the Creator, whatever you want to call it, Worldwide Church of the Creator. I don't know where I got the worldwide from. That this Church of the Creator, I met several of them in prison. But they could never really, at diverse times, not together. One would go and another one would come a year later, and another one would go and somebody else would come along.
And Klassen was the founder of that.
Yeah.
Well, what's the appeal of it?
It's atheism. It's a belief in evolution. When you ask them who the creator is, they'll claim that we created ourselves.
Okay. Like, how can we? Well, let's say we don't exist. So, how do we create ourselves if we don't exist? I don't understand.
Well, through evolution. Our DNA created us through the evolutionary process.
So, do they believe in, like, Big Bang, Charles Darwin-type evolution?
Well, they accept most of the mainstream science, yes, from what I understand.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. So what do they think about that out-of-Africa theory? They must like that, too, right?
Yeah, you know something? They always got upset when I tried to go there with them.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
And some of them, I remember one guy in particular. His name's Darren Garnett, and he was actually a good friend of mine, but he was a creator, and I always busted his balls, and we always went back and forth about it. He swore that we evolved separately out of a different, you know, cesspool of primordial ooze. So basically the same astronomically impossible event happened twice. Because the odds against evolution... The odds against a chemical reaction or an electric reaction causing the amino acids that create our DNA to line up properly are quite astronomical. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce that word right.
The box is talking about the out of Africa theory. Let's assume for the sake of argument that evolution is true and the out-of-Africa theory is true. I've been hit with that in the past from people who said, well, we all come from Africa, man. Okay, yeah. And my immediate response is, okay, are you saying we all came from black people? If we all came from Africa, does that naturally lead to we all came from black people? And that usually stops them in their tracks when I say that.
Well, that's where they're going.
It's an illogical leap, you see. But they were making the illogical leap in their mind. Oh, if you come from Africa, you must be black. But you stop and make them think about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the out of Africa is, we all came from Africa, well, therefore we're all brothers, right?
Yeah, but they're making the implication that we're all originally niggers.
Absolutely. They're making that implication.
No question. They say the blacks are a lot older than us.
Yeah, like they'd know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like they'd know. I mean, how can you determine? I mean, how can you determine that? I'm no archaeologist or anything, but once you start talking millions of years and stuff like that, I mean, how are you gonna know that? How is that possible?
Well, they do admit that we're only about 20,000 years old. That they're forced to admit that. They're forced to give us no more than 20,000 years.
Okay.
So they surmise that we came from Africa having descended from blacks. And when we got to Europe, our genes diverged. We had genetic drift.
and we lost the melanin in our skin, and our hair suddenly got straight and yellow and red and brown. And
but I mean,
and our
brains
developed.
Why?
Yeah, right. Our brains got twice as big too.
I mean, you could have a little fun with this argument, though. So basically, I would say to them, so basically, what you're saying is that white people are a more evolved branch of the nigger. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
That's what they're saying.
I mean, yeah, that's what they're saying. And
but they wouldn't say more evolved. They would say differently evolved. That they wouldn't accept that more evolved statement, I don't think.
Okay. Okay. Let's use different then. So what you're saying is whites managed to change, but the Negro stayed the same. So he's like in a state of arrested development, or what's
it's the same lost cause as all evolution. If evolution happened, we would be able to observe it over 5,000 years of recorded history. If evolution happened, I mean, if people came from apes, why do we still have apes? If white people came from Negroes, why do we still have Negroes?
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, we have blacks here in America in northern climates with us now for 400 years in some places. They're still black.
Exactly. And what about Chinese? I mean, Chinese people have had Arctic climates since the beginning of time, and yet they're still yellow.
Well, yeah, and the Chinese of Southeast Asia are still just as yellow.
Uh-huh.
Evolution's a fraud, and whenever we accept it, we're basically giving in to Satan.
I agree. It's the whole out of Africa theory. But you know, when you talk to people out there, just the average person, and even the average Judeo-Christian, they believe in that. You know, they believe in that theory.
Well, because they're too stupid to think about it for themselves. They're too lazy. They're too lazy to examine the issues. They're too lazy to do the thinking necessary to understand what is being said and to rationalize it and realize that it can't be right.
Well, I can answer every one of those points y'all just brought up with one singular answer that'll work every time. It's all Whitey's fault.
There you go. There you go.
That's a typical. It's Whitey's fault. Whitey stole from him. Whitey kept him down.
Whitey kept him down. Yeah.
Well, Victor, that's I don't know if you ever heard the story I told, and this is a totally true story. I had a Negro neighbor in prison, and he used to have to hear me talk to all the white guys that came around, and he hated it. And he was a prison scholar, and he was big into that Afrocentrism. And he thought that the original Egyptians were black, that we all came from Africa. Yeah, you know, white men descended from them, the whole line. And white men got all their culture and learning from Negroes. And I looked at him and I said, well, then how come y'all didn't have an alphabet when we found yous 300 years ago? And he looked at me in the eye and he said, that's because you stole it from us. That's a true story. How the hell do you steal an alphabet from somebody?
It's not like
it's a concept of the mind.
Yeah.
You know, I had an African guy. He was a mulatto type. Try to convince me that Bantu and ancient Greek shared a linguistic commonality.
Yeah, right.
I'm not kidding you. I'm like,
first ancient Greek had, for instance, five cases to their nouns, and most Negroes can't count to five, right? There's absolutely no commonality there whatsoever.
Well, it's just amazing how bad the Africans really, you know, want to sort of weasel into Western culture. And of course, the Jews have been doing that for thousands of years, too, you know. You know, always.
I would immediately have to ask him how to show me a few Bantu verbs and explain how to conjugate them.
Yeah.
And he'd be lost right there. He'd be.
Oh, he was. Yeah, he eventually got frustrated and hung up on the call, you know. But I was just amazed. I was like, how are you getting that? Bantu. Bantu's down. Because, I don't know, he saw on television one night that there was a black African tribe down there that claimed to be descendants of the Israelites or some bullcrap like that, right? That he saw on Nat Geo or the History Channel or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's in Ethiopia, isn't it?
No. It was down in South Africa.
South Africa, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I was thinking, where do you get this crap, you know? And it's like, well, you'd probably get it from the guy, you know, the same History Channel that who's that Jewish guy that says he found Jesus' grave? Who's that Jew? You know, that Jew on freaking Discovery Channel says he found Jesus' bones and all that stuff, right?
All that, yeah.
You know, it's just the stuff, man, that it's like, can you not see that these History Channels are used as a political hammer to shape and mold your mind?
Well,
they're another tool of the Jews, and the Jews are going to use all of their resources in their interests.
Absolutely.
You can't imagine that Rush Limbaugh or the Glenn Beck or any of these clowns that are on Jewish-owned media are going to say anything that is not agreeable to Jewish the Jewish goals and politics and their aims for this country.
Absolutely. And it's just sad that white people, you know, the Judeo-Christian or white people at large, you know, that not... they can't quite seem to, you know, can't quite seem to, you know, do critical analysis on their own. You know, when you hear stuff like that, you know, check it, double check it, analyze it, criticize it. Is this true? Is this bullcrap? What is this? You know, you don't see a lot of that going on out there. They just go, oh, out of Africa. Okay, Africans look more primitive than any other race, so therefore we all spawn from Africans, you know. Who, you know, I mean, that's kind of the crap they're able to do, right?
Well, people are conditioned in school that all scientists have authority, that all politicians have authority, that all media has authority, that they get everything they know from USA Today and from CNN or Fox News, and because it comes from one of those outlets, it has to be true. And that's the thinking. That's the mainstream thinking.
Right. And I guess you heard that they're trying to I was listening even to what it was like on an Alex Jones story where he was talking about how they're trying to censor the internet with putting a device in your house or something like that. What does anybody can anybody does anybody know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't know about it.
Oh, okay.
I've heard that they Obama wants power to censor the internet, but I don't know about home devices. I mean,
I don't think
people are going to accept that.
Well, in China, this is being proposed. In China, in countries where, you know, like the Middle East, where they do try to do some internet censorship, because it does go on, they usually censor it at the router level, right?
Right.
Well, here they're trying to propose a bill where not only do they censor it at the router, but when you purchase, say, cable, say, from Time Warner or somebody like that, you have to have a Time Warner technician come into your home or they usually mail you a router or something and you screw it into the cable jack or something like that, right? Well, they want to pass some legislation to where they can give you a device to where it has much, much greater control over your access through the device when you get it through the mail. You see what I mean?
Yeah, they got us all to buy licenses.
Yeah. It'll never work. The douche rags up there like Joseph Lieberman and all these rags up there on Capitol Hill, it'll never work, but it doesn't stop them from trying, you know? That's just the latest effort, right? It'll never work.
I hope not. Good.
Well, and the, well, the reason it won't work is because the we're kind of in a cyber race to where the younger generation, it's kind of a cyber warfare out there to where people are ever getting knowledgeable on how to circumvent things. And young kids, they just run right around that like it ain't nothing, right? Ain't nothing. They're good at it.
Oh, yeah, they can defeat any sort of sensor software in a school computer lab just like that.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And some senator sitting up on Capitol Hill isn't going to have a clue what that kid's doing, right? That's the disconnect.
Yeah, and that's the appropriate word right there, disconnect. The disconnect between the federal government and Joe Blow, the rag man down here, is so great that the senators and the reps honestly do not know how people think anymore.
Right.
Well, right, and not only that, but that sounds to me like some device manufacturer has some senator's ear, right?
There you go.
Yeah, they're going to think they're going to make it a federal mandate, and they're going to mandate on all the ISPs here in North America that you have to get one of these, you know, special modem devices that basically, you know, I would imagine, you know, censor all the hate speech out and all that sort of stuff. You know what I'm talking about, right? That's how they think it's an attempt. It won't go anywhere. There's been lots of attempts in the past. I think Alex Jones kind of overblows it and overplays it.
You've got to make it newsworthy.
Yeah, he's kind of a fearmonger, you know? And he's kind of a fearmonger. And there'll always be censorship on the internet. I mean, there is right now today. It's warfare out there. It's like they'll never completely dominate it. It's there's a paradigm shift, and they don't seem to understand that.
Well, and okay, all right. Think about this. All right, let's say they want some sort of censorship of hate speech, whatever that entails. All right, so we can't say the word nigger anymore on the internet. Well, guess what? Nigger's just a word. It's a slang derivative of the Spanish negro or the Latin niger. Okay, so what if we start calling them Canadians? Some people do.
Dark Canadians.
What if Canadian's a new code word? I hate Canadians. Man, there's too many Canadians in my neighborhood. A Canadian broke into my house. Yeah, a Canadian broke into my house the other day and stole everything. You know, okay, what are they going to do? They're going to censor the word Canadian now? There's no stopgap for hate speech.
Right.
Because people are way too creative, and they're going to say what they want to say.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like they'll try, but the information is here. It's upon us. It's just like the printing age back when the Gutenberg back when they invented the printing press, it changed society. You know, that's just the way it is. Well, the internet's here to stay. It's going to change society. That's just the way it is. They're not going to control it like they did with television and radio because television and radio is a broadcast, whereas the internet is not. It's interactive. You can take it down to one-on-one. Can't do that with television and radio, right?
That's right.
Well, right. They are upset about the internet. The Jews are upset about the internet. They can't control it. That they can't control the alternative media.
No monopoly.
Not the way it is right now. And right, there is no monopoly. That they would much rather have us all at CNN.com voting in some stupid poll about Britney Spears' big-ass midriff.
Right,
I mean, who has the nicer bus line, Paris Hilton or Britney Spears or whatever? That's what they would all rather. They'd be very comfortable having us all right there.
Right. I know. And that's what's making them so mad. And it's like, you can try to do what you can do, but on the internet, but it's not going to stop it because the internet is intrinsically interactive, and whereas radio and television is not. And just,
even Bill Gates, you know, he was trying to get his claws around the internet to come up with the interactivity / entertainment paradigm that enraptured the world. He was trying to do that back in 93 and 94, and He failed miserably every time he tried.
He sure did.
And AOL thought they were the thing back in 93, and the internet just destroyed AOL.
It sure did.
They thought they had it going on, and the internet just wrecked them.
It did. I mean,
Well, people can put up websites for $6 a month, say, on PalWeb. Yeah, you know, how do you compete with that, you know?
Right. And it's like, and these big media moguls, MSNBC, CNN, you know, CNBC, Fox News, you know, the New York Times and the Washington Post, et cetera, they're getting their clocks cleaned, you know, out there in the traditional media, and they don't like it, you know.
Well, they can start making examples out of some of us.
They just won't be able to catch everybody. I mean, that's the thing.
Right,
it's like,
but what if they, throw some people in jail and stuff and scare the rest off?
Yeah, I mean, for example, like those people that used to run Pirate Bay, they were people from Sweden. Sweden tried to haul them in and prosecute them for copyrighted material, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I mean, crap. I mean, what's to keep me from running my server out of Honduras or this or that? Or you know, you can't stop it, right?
Well, look at all the kiddie porn is being run on offshore servers.
Yeah, I wonder who owns that.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it's all Jewish owned. Every bit of it.
Yeah, but they don't want to censor that.
And they claim they can't stop it. And you're right, they don't want to. That they want to arrest people here that buy the stuff. And I can't condone buying the stuff under any means. But they don't. They could just stop that if they wanted to. They could stop. I think they could stop that in a minute if they wanted to. They don't want to.
Well, anything that demoralizes our people weakens us.
Right. Absolutely.
Hey, I came across a new character online named Mel C. Schultz, PhD, English professor at Pennsylvania University. He's attacking Judeo-Christians, conservative Christians, though they don't know what's going on. But I also
so far, think so good.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, Mel is he's pushing the gay agenda. He looks like I authored a little thing for Mel. If I can be so familiar with you, you appear to be that phallic worshipping Khazarian Herodian mixed breed of scoundrels that have been a curse to themselves and all of mankind for generations. Saying a prayer once a year to be forgiven for lying in advance. Cute. Never able to suppress your inbred perverseness and confusing it for freedom. Willingness to lie and pander doesn't make you more intelligent, kinder, or just. Without a doubt, you are hardly a man at all. Self-hating shadow of a man whose only law is none at all. How's that?
You wrote that to him?
Yeah.
That's great. Oh,
that's really
that's good. It's almost poetic.
Yeah.
Almost, yeah. Maybe you should get us a copy that we can post it in the forum or something.
Okay. Yeah, I just
you should sign up for the forum and post it in the forum. How about that?
Yeah, I've never done that. I just didn't know how to do it, I guess, or I didn't take the time to do it. I was reading a book, The Home Invaders, by Don Wildman. He was, at least he was fighting a good fight for 30 years. He just retired. And that's how I came across Mel. Mel was rejoicing over Mr. Wildman retiring out of his fight against pornography and anti-Christian values on TV. Oh, yeah. Ticked me off.
Yeah, no, that was poetic. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I'll post it on there. Well, you can't come across, you have to hit them hard because they think that they're smarter than us.
Well, do not think you're going to be insulting him. It is impossible to insult those people.
Yeah, you're probably right. He's probably, gosh, I love it.
He may try to use it to sue you or something, but he's not going to be insulted.
Okay. I was hopefully he would wonder, what the heck's this Herodian stuff?
Oh, he'll know what you mean. He's an English teacher. He'll know what you mean. I'm sure if he's a Jew and an English professor that he's read in that area.
Yes, Seychelles. Mel is a pretty common non-Irish name. Not always, but...
The only guy I ever knew named Melvin was a that was not a Jew, was a redneck from West Virginia. Couldn't possibly have been a Jew. If you'd seen him, you'd know, but there's no way he was a Jew.
I've known a nigger named Melvin.
Yeah, that's who. But they got it from Jews because, you know, Melvin was the name of the John. I mean, come on.
Those blacks that said that they were Israelites, there was a Welshman that actually did the DNA test on those people. It turned out that they were related to the Jews. So apparently some Jews broke loose and got down there somewhere in South Africa and married the blacks. So those blacks people, they do sort of adhere to Judaism, but they're not Israelites by any stretch, nor do they have our blood in them. They actually have Jewish blood in them. Hey, Bill, is there any other way to trace lineage besides they're constantly using the female DNA?
Well, mitochondrial DNA, everything they say about mitochondrial DNA is pure bullshit.
That's what I thought.
Okay. What they do, you know, mitochondrial DNA has only the instructions to a cell so that the cell, from the mitochondrial DNA knows how to conduct its basic life functions, okay, knows how to process food into energy and things like that. That type of data is believed to be in mitochondrial DNA. Now, it is only passed to us from the mother. But what they do is they take vastly different mitochondrial DNA and they claim that this DNA mutates itself every X number of generations. And they claim that they could reverse extrapolate those mutations back to a common source. So what they're doing is all conjecture. It is highly controversial, even among scientists, and it's purely conjectural that they could say that this DNA that's here today used to look like that DNA 533 generations ago. Yeah, you know, or 400 generations ago, or whatever. That's what they're doing. They're claiming that it's different today because it mutated, and that they could guess when those mutations occurred.
So it's pure
now,
BS.
That sounds like bullshit to me. I've read about it, and it's pure garbage.
Bolshevik.
It's just pure garbage, what they say about mitochondrial DNA. It's totally unscientific conjecture, and I won't even... I can't give it an ounce of credibility.
There's no DNA testing that's valid as far as...
they can test the haplogroup types and things like that of the X chromosome and X, the male DNA. That's tested all the time. And Jews and Arabs, Clifton and I discussed this at length on a program.
Right.
Jews and Arabs share that J haplogroup type that and many of the groups in Europe and Asia share haplogroup types that seem to make very much sense from the identity perspective of history. But, we'll never get an audience with scholars. That just isn't going to happen. And historians and DNA researchers don't get together very often. You find very few academics which are who are cross-trained, that all of the sciences are highly pigeonholed. And the different sciences come up with different views of the world where that they could be reconciled much easier if they were just, cross disciplines, which it's difficult. And I think that the Jews take great advantage of that. The whole Indo-European question, it proves it to me that these people are just, all these different anthropologists have their heads up their derrieres and they don't want to, actually look at the data and compare it with cross-discipline information from language and history.
Yeah, dual seed line 8 and 9 is a show you did with Eli. Really, I just listened to last night, 8 and 9, really straightened out some things, my understanding of the migrations and how the Israelites got up into various areas at different times. If anybody... So dual seed line. I don't know which show. What show was that on, Bill?
That was on the Chris DeGeno's program on Friday night.
Yeah, 8 and 9. That's really went into a good thing on the migrations and the fact that Yahweh had a race, not a breed. He had a race of people, not a breed of people. And the Arabs and the Jews are a breed. Pretty bad.
Well, right. They're both mixed. That they share common genes, though. And I'm waiting for MacDog to get back because he asked a question I want to answer, but I don't want him to miss it. I don't know if he caught that program that Clifton and I did on the you know, answering the BIWF and the things that they say about DNA.
Yeah, that was good.
The tales that they invent. It's just crazy. And they've embraced evolution. They've embraced evolution. They're no better than Judeo-Christians. The BIWF is no better off than the average Southern Baptist. It's a damn shame. They should know better.
Maybe they need to change their acronym for bought with Jewish money, BWJF, or M.
Yeah, right. The British Israel Jewish Federation.
Did you see that where that Holocaust denier was found dead in his car, Poland?
I heard about that. Somebody sent me an email about that.
Yeah, he was kicked out of his job. I got one from Fallon, and then I sent it to Gerald and Maui, and maybe they passed it on, or somebody else did it. Yeah, he was forced to live in his car. Died at what age? But sad thing. Man stood up for the truth.
What country was he in?
In Poland. He was found in a shopping center parking lot in the western Polish city of Opole. Professor Rata Jacques was suspended in April 1999 from his teaching post at Opole University Historical Institute after state prosecutors opened an investigation into the publication of book Temeri Nebesnik, Dangerous Themes. The body, which was severely decomposed, had been identified by Radzetic's family, so additional DNA tests will not have to be carried out. Judging by the state of the body, recent high temperatures of the man had been dead for up to 2 weeks.
That's incredible. In a mall parking lot? Wasn't he found in a mall parking lot?
Yeah. They suspect that the car was moved there. Because the security would have come across it before that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, when you see the same car in the same spot 2, 3, 4 nights in a row.
Yeah.
He worked 11 years for the university and other universities 3 years after the publication of Dangerous Themes. He claimed that it was not scientifically possible to kill millions of people in alleged death camp gas chambers.
Well, it's not. And the Holocaust, the accusation of the German people by the Jews, it is probably the second biggest hate crime of the 20th century.
Yeah.
The Jews are perpetrating a hate crime. They're demonizing an entire race with crimes that they didn't commit.
What's number one?
The Bolshevik destruction of Christian Russia.
Killed 60 million or more. Anywhere between 30 and 70 or something.
And that was another Jewish hate crime. Of course, we don't hear anything about it in the Jewish-controlled media.
Yeah, that was a real... When I found that out, that was the most... That was a turning point in my life. Besides,
and they would have... The second and third greatest hate crimes in history. The first greatest hate crime was when the Jews killed God.
Yep.
Or at least they tried. MacDog, are you back yet? I guess not.
Who were you looking for? I'm sorry.
I'm looking for MacDog. He asked a question, then he said he'd be right back, but he I think he ran down for an ice cream or something. Or a six-pack. Or what would they buy in Mississippi? Maybe a corn dog or something. I don't know. Hush puppy. I don't think he has to make any down there, Joe. I think he's got plenty. E. Raymond Catt wrote a lot, but it took me a long time to find some of the stuff where we got some of this stuff from. The same thing with Swift. And some of Swift's stuff I never found.
What stuff were you missing from Swift?
Well, he loves to quote from these obscure books. What's that one Jew book he loves to quote from?
He's always making a reference to it. And I doubt if any of it's legitimate, but it's not the Kabbalah. It's one of those other books, and the name of it's escaped me right now. I feel like an idiot because I should know it.
On eBay, there's a company.
The Zohar. The Zohar. That's it.
Well, I've heard of that before somewhere.
Probably.
It's a Kabbalistic book.
Yes.
Things like the Zohar and the Sefer Yetzirah and stuff like that.
There on eBay, there's a guy that sells a lot of Swift stuff. Original stuff, too.
Really?
Really.
Yeah. And a lot of Jack Moore's original stuff.
Well, you people with a couple of spare dollars should probably be trying to scap some of it up, maybe. I don't know if it's really that important.
Well, probably not. A lot of things have been with you and Clifton and Eli and other folks have really tightened up some of the stuff those folks were doing. But I tell you, without Bertrand Compere, boy, oh boy, he was really influential on me.
Well, let me tell you something. Compere is the, I have a lot of respect for him, a lot more from a scholastic viewpoint than I do for Swift and Gale. To me, he was the step in the right direction towards scholarship from because Swift, a lot of things that he said were out there, and Son of the Mist pointed out, Cat didn't like to document all of his sources. Swift didn't like to document all of his sources. But Compere put a lot of sanity to their work and their statements. You know what I mean? He was like a step in the right direction towards a more scholarly assessment of Christian Israel beliefs.
Yes, he started to organize it. Cap did a lot of good stuff, too. Then he kind of went south on us.
Yeah, he denied 2C line in the end and a couple other crazy ideas. But his work is sometimes poorly documented.
Was he ever 2C line at all?
Yeah, his dad was.
Okay. Really?
He was, too, yeah.
Huh. Mm. I did not know that.
Can you expand more on that? Because I never heard that either.
Oh, I'd heard, I don't know if I heard it from Clef or who I'd heard it from, that it was his father was 2C line and he was 2C line. And then as he went down the road, he came 1C line or whatever. I don't know if it was Emery, I don't know who influenced him. Somebody influenced him.
Well, I've always heard the same story.
Yeah.
And it might be from Clifton, but I can't guarantee that.
I can't either, right?
But I heard it have that understanding.
A lot of information out there. Hey, I'm just glad those guys were around.
Yeah, right.
But we can't ever, it's important that we build on the work of our predecessors and not worship them, right? Not put them on pedestals.
Oh, yeah. It's Jesus, that Yeshua that we worship.
He's the only one on a pedestal, right?
Yeah. He's the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. King Priests. He's the king of them all. That's us.
Well, I still got to hand it to some of these early CI scholars, you know. I mean, golly.
There's a lot of them out there that aren't, didn't make it as big as, Swift and Compere and Dale and all. Some other guys out there. Who was that guy, French name? Gosh.
I think one guy that was pretty good was Cameron. He wrote that book, Covenant People. He wrote A Dearborn Independent for Henry Ford. He was the editor. He was pretty good. I think he's probably highly underrated. He knew the identity story. He was older than any of them. And Howard Rand was probably a big help, but he was a lot along the BIWF / Herbert W. Armstrong School of halfway right information and halfway wrong.
Hey, 7 of 9, for whatever reason, your microphone is a little sensitive.
I'm glad I didn't have to tell him. He thinks I'm picking on him all the time.
echoes.
Yeah, we're getting an echo from you there, 7 of 9.
Okay, I think I'll just unplug it all because I got the thing. Well, I had it all shut off when you said that, my mic was actually shut off, and still it acts up.
That's strange. Maybe you have a mic built in to your computer that it goes on when your mic is shut off.
I'll have to ask my son that, because he built this thing.
I'll bet there's an internal mic built into the computer.
I'll ask him about that.
Yeah, that NSA thing isn't working well tonight.
Well, beyond that, what you say, I only have the headphones on. I don't have any speakers going.
Well, they could still give feedback if your mic's too sensitive, honest. I have that problem. On my other computer, I have that problem.
I can see the thing lighting up, you know, even though I'm not doing anything.
That's when there's feedback.
Right.
I'm assuming that you went to settings, you know, capture, and you played with the voice activation ruler there, right? Slide ruler there, you know?
Yes, I did. I can play with it again.
Oh, no. I mean, I figured this wasn't the first time.
Well, you can slide it to the right a little more and see what happens, right?
Okay.
If anybody else has anything to say, just right-click your own name and click grant request talk power, and I'll turn your microphone on. Where is MacDog? Where did he go?
Yeah, I know. They call me Kaiser's got something to say, don't you? I know he's dying to say something.
Probably.
Testing, 1, 2. How does that seem, anyone?
Well, it's, don't come back through your well, it sounds good so far, right? Because I'm not coming back through it.
Okay, I slid the thing over to zero.
Oh, did you now? Okay, well, whatever you did, that seemed to sort it out.
Yeah, that did it.
Yeah, well, thanks for telling me.
He's actually set it about 2 notches to the left of zero.
Yeah, it's interesting how everybody's equipment's a little different. While some people can get by with, you know, almost having the bar on zero, others, you know, or having the bar right in the middle, others got to shift it all the way to the right or to the left. It's really wild.
I heard Gerald finally fixed his problems. Muniker helped him out with that, but he never showed up tonight. So, oh well. It's all right.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I talked with Gerald this afternoon, and we got that straightened out. But he's got something else that he can't see the little blue dots down the side, and the icons on the top are words where we have the microphone with a red X, and he can't quite get that figured out, and I haven't figured it out yet. So you can talk with Pilgrim maybe and find out if that's something she can come up with. But he works now. He had his hotkey as the mouse, which as soon as he touched the mouse or the keyboard, it would mute him. So we put it on the F12 key. And now it works just fine. But he said he wasn't going to come by, but I encouraged him to come by just to test it and see what happens.
MacDog asked the question about Jewish DNA before, and then you ran off. And I just wanted to say that there's a program on the front page of Christogeniter I did with Clifton about the British Israel World Federation and their contentions concerning DNA and the Jews. And it shows that the Jews and Arabs share a haplotype group called J. And you really could call it the Jew gene. And that they all have that haplotype J in their DNA in common, and nobody else has it.
Do we have to check that out then?
Yeah, it's on the front page of Christogeniter. And there's notes and PDF files attached to it.
So you think it's safe to say, I've been kind of theorize, is there some type of gene that we have that no other race has?
No, the haplotypes that distinguish us are actually prevalent throughout the mixed races of the Middle East and Near Asia. And it proves, I think that proves our origins from Mesopotamia and our trek, you know, into Europe.
Right, what about like the Asian or Oriental races, they have nothing in common, do they?
Well, there is actually some DNA that's in common with some of the mixed races of Mesopotamia and Turkey with Orientals, and that shows that the Mongol influence that happened there.
What about, is there any white, didn't someone say there's some white blood in Japan?
Well, there's some R-type DNA that stretches pretty far east.
Yeah, there's a particular race in Japan that
I'm sorry, Michael.
Oh no! I was just going to say there's a particular race in Japan. I can't remember the name right offhand; it escapes me. But if you look at pictures of them, they look like they have some white mixture in them.
Ainu.
Yeah, but
thank you.
They aren't necessarily white. I think the DNA shows otherwise.
Oh, they're definitely not white, but they look like they have some white mixture. In other words, they look like some white people were there at one time, right? You know what I mean? It looks like.
Yeah, right. I understand what you mean.
By white, you mean Caucasian race?
Yes, Caucasians. Right. Because for example, like the, what'd you call them again, Victor?
Ainu,
or something like that. Yeah, you know that like they don't have any problem with facial hair. They're you know they just look like they have a little, you know, they don't look white by any means, but they definitely don't look like the typical, you know, Japanese Oriental either. You know.
Incidentally, they are the niggers of Japan too.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Huh. Because probably people, how do people view them? Do they, in Japan, do they view them as mongrels or what?
Well, the Japanese or Nipponese or whatever you want to call them, they are, believe it or not, extremely prejudiced toward anybody who's not Japanese. Now, they may not show it overtly, but they are. These guys make the clan look like a bunch of tree huggers. Okay, so the Ainu are considered like an inferior subset with some mixture from outside the islands. I have no doubt that some Adamites probably wound it, because Adamites, you can find their remains all over Asia in different places.
Right.
And I have no doubt some came and interbred with them and passed on some of their genetics.
But
the Japanese generally look down on them. Pretty much the way Americans have looked down on niggers over the decades.
Right. Well, I mean, the Ainu, they look like mongrels. That's what they look like. They look like a mixture of Asiatic and Caucasian. That's what they look like. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think so. I've seen some of them.
Oh yeah, I just punched them up. Yeah, they got full beards. Ainu.
Well, the thing of it is, I mean, it just proves how far flung, you know, race mixing was even back in times of antiquity, which I think builds a case that the ancients, you know, visited North America, were here in North America. I mean, I think the world of antiquity was a lot more well-traveled than what our modern-day historians give credit. What do you think, William?
Well, there's no doubt. Phoenicians, I have the Phoenician people and the ancient Egyptians in the New World, you know, so to speak, and all over the lands that are attached to the Atlantic Ocean at a very early time.
I found online titled Out of Europe, First Americans. It's at first-americans.blogspot.com.
I don't know what their particular spin is, but there's a school of thought that leads, and it has sense, that there's some, you know, solid ground that it stands on, that the Clovis culture of the southeastern North American continent, that's where it was most prevalent, it is actually from France, that there's a direct connection there.
Yes.
And the Clovis culture is, you know, contains or represents, I should say, some of the oldest presence of people in North America.
Yeah, the general theory is that they followed the ice across the northern Atlantic during the Ice Age and made their way onto the North American continent. But you can find
that's
the
because
almost
they don't
the,
want to attribute any technology at all, whatever, to them.
Right. Well, I'm talking about these Caucasians from France. They followed the ice. That's the general theory, all the way over to North America. And you can look at the Clovis points and then look at these points from France, and they're virtually identical. So, yeah, Adamites have spread out all over the place. We just have a gene that makes us want to go see what's on the other side of the hill.
It does appear that way.
We always want to be free.
Hebrew means pioneer, wanderer, you know? Am I right, Bill?
Well, yeah, it could be read to mean that. It means to cross over.
Did you ever hear what Eustace Mullen said at Matt?
What's that?
What?
He said it came from Hiberu, and it meant the throat slitter from across the river.
Yeah, well, he's a little confused.
Yeah, I know. That's what he said. Well, he didn't like the Edomites very much, so any way he could come up with a way to slander him, he did.
well, right, and too bad the Edomites aren't really Hebrews. And that's exactly the kind of scholarship that I tried to criticize Jesse for when he was on the program. Yeah, you know, it's a little too creative is all I'm saying.
Mullins is dead now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he from what I understand, you know, I didn't know too much about him, but he started coming around pretty to a large degree to CI, didn't he?
Yeah, I had one of his buddies in here today.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Lyle. And Lyle's the one introduced him to CI.
Oh, wow. So how far did Mullins take it? I mean, did he go to the
Thief
line? Or?
Yeah, oh, yeah. He embraced that right away. Oh, sure.
Okay. No, I know he had a large influence with you know, a lot of people, you know.
Yeah, cursing.
Well, let me say that Zenith has just made a post in the chat here that he has some firsthand knowledge concerning Asia, and he just posted a link to a blog that has some statements about the 12 tribes Aryan injections of blood into Japan. Is the way I would term it, just in case anybody wanted to see that.
Oh, Zenos.
Oh, pictures of the Anu?
Oh, yeah. 12 tribes connection with Japan.
Hmm. Huh. And you say they're just treated like niggers over there, are they? Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I know some people, there's some secular historians would try to say that they're, a Caucasian tribe, and it's like I've seen pictures of them, and no way would you call them, and what I call them, Caucasian. They just look like they've come in contact with white people and been mongrelized. That's all, you know.
Well, it's apparent to me that they're all mongrelized now anyway, so it really doesn't matter, right?
It doesn't.
It's nice to know the history, and it's important to know the history, but I wouldn't try to teach them identity.
No. No, I wouldn't either. But, it's like, I think they had some of that contact. They had some of that contact over here in North America. Like, if you were to go up into, some of the Canadian tribes, like the Malmec and stuff like that, their national flag looks like, it came from England, and the Indians up there definitely look whiter than the Indians, down south and out west. Definitely.
That's true.
Well, the Indians down south are mixed with niggers. Okay, they're not like Asiatics much anymore. They're just some sort of weird two-legged mongrel running around.
I've actually met American Negroes who claim to be Blackfoot Indians, and they always pick that tribe, the Blackfoot. I'd be Blackfoot. They take that seriously.
But
they're so stupid they are.
Be white. No, I'm sorry, kidding.
But,
You guys remember Red Fox, right? Sanford and Son.
Oh,
sure,
yeah.
Sure.
Okay, well, you know where he got that light color and that weird nose from? His mother was
Jewish?
A Seminole. No, his mother was a Seminole.
No, uh-uh. Didn't know. But you do you know how many white people I've seen that claim to have Indian heritage? I mean, it's just stupid. And it just goes to show how much propaganda has been fed into our people's minds about, you know, they so badly want to be an American, and they've fed them this propaganda that if you're white, you should go home to Europe kind of stuff, right? That yeah. I've talked to people who are just blonde haired, blue eyed, and they go, and they'll swear up and down that they're Cherokee. And I'll go, oh, really? I go, you know, I used to have, they go, yeah, sure. Where do you think I get my blonde hair and blue eyes? And I, you know, without busting out laughing, I go, well, it isn't from the Cherokee. I can assure you that, you know.
Yeah, so, you know where they just why they're doing that? Is they're doing it for two reasons. Number one, because it's not cool. Yeah, it's not cool to be a white person. And number two, some of them are trying to explain some incredibly ugly people in their family. Because let's face it, not all Israelites are attractive. Okay, I met some pretty repulsive-looking ones.
Right, okay? Right.
And that's what they're doing. It's not cool. You know, they're explaining some of their family members. And it's not cool to be a white person. So, you know, yeah, I'm always Cherokee. It's never one of the obscure tribes. It's always Cherokee, because that's the one.
It is always Cherokee. I met 100 million, not 100 million, but an endless number of rednecks in prison that were part Cherokee.
Oh, yeah.
And they were almost all, you know, absolutely white. I mean, I wouldn't think that they were anything else.
Exactly. And it's like, now, why is there this thing with white people and I that seem to think that they have some Cherokee? It's like, you don't have any Cherokee in you. And if you did, I'd be able to see some of it. And I don't see any of it. You know, I'm not saying I can't be fooled, but... But I mean, come on! Somebody that goes, well, I'm Cherokee. Where do you think I get my blonde hair, blue eyes? I mean, obviously, he hasn't got a clue about, you know, anything.
Well,
right?
My opinion, and I have an opinion on it, is that in the early days of radio, Indians were romanticized to a great degree by the radio, and a lot of young white men or boys really took, you know, they're caught up, got enraptured by that romanticism and wanted to believe they were part Indian.
So well, Billy goes back further than that. It goes
they
back
started identifying with those Indians.
It goes way back further than that. It goes back to writers like James Fenimore Cooper and others who promoted the idea of the noble savage.
In the late 1800s, right.
Yeah, they were two or three generations disconnected from people who actually lived in the American Revolution or the Indian Wars and stuff like that. Yeah, so they totally distorted early American history, Longfellow and people like that. And that's where that's where it started.
Now, the typical white kid that I met in prison couldn't tell me the names of his four sets of grandparents.
Right. But he swears up and down he's got Cherokee ancestors, right? But he couldn't tell you the name.
All four of his grandparents, you know, the maiden names and the last names, and swore he had part Indian blood, right? What are you? Oh, I'm American. I'm American. What do you mean American? German, Irish? Oh no, I'm part Cherokee. Well, what are the other parts? I don't know. American. Well, what's your grandmother's last names? Oh, I don't know. Well, how about your mother? What was her name before she got married to your father? I don't know. Yeah, you know, that's the answers I'd get. That was typical.
Right. It's really sad, isn't it?
Sad. You remember Lone Ranger and Tonto?
Yeah.
Remember that
show?
Grew up on it. Yeah, they got surrounded by 5,000 Indians. and he says to Tonto, looks like we're goners. And he says, what do you mean, white man?
What do you mean, we, white boy?
Yeah, that's right. What do you mean, white man? Anyway, I didn't tell that good, but anyway, I remembered it.
Did you ever look at those Indians and all those Lone Ranger serials? I mean, like, none of them were Indians. They're just guys with wigs. Some of them were Jews. Some of them were white boys just with wigs on.
Wow. Dane on his skin.
Hey, I got two.
Yeah, right. Now, here's an Indian for you. This is half Chinese and half Jewish right here, right?
Where is this?
McBride, Son of the Mist, put a link in the chat room to a real Indian.
Sitting Bull?
Which looks like a Mexican. I mean, you give him a haircut and put a T-shirt on him, you know, a hip-hop T-shirt, and he's a Mexican.
Well, most of these Mexicans you see are actually just little mestizo, Apache, Lord, I don't know what they are, but they're just...
Well, that's what they are. They're half Jew and half Apache, or half Jew and half Sioux, half Jew and half Pueblo.
Yeah, and that was like back in the 80s, 90s. I don't know how long that Indian worship, spiritual worship, and that they're at one with the earth, and the white man took all the land away and tried to own it and brought disease. And I, you know, I'm not quite sure how far back that goes, but you know, it's just amazing how many people I have met that are clearly white and they swear up and down they're Cherokee. Yeah, or some or Crow or some something like that, right?
How about the Church of Latter-day Saints tried to tell you that the Indians are the lost tribes of Israel?
Which is really
yeah. I was just gonna say that. I mean, and then there's the churches, the Mormons who think that the Indians are one of the lost tribes of Israel. Now, but then again, they think Jesus walked the North American continent too. So, I mean,
boy, is that boy? This one Indian woman here. Oh my gosh, does she have the protruding face and the sloping forehead?
Is that a woman?
That's about the third photo in. That's a woman.
Where on earth did they get the idea that...
Oh, I didn't scroll.
How's a quiet woman?
I mean, where on earth did they get the idea that Indians were the lost tribe of Israel? Why?
Big noses. Suppose,
big noses? I mean, do you suppose they were... I don't know. Do you suppose... I mean,
well,
honestly,
Joseph
where
Smith,
does this folklore, myth and folklore come from? Because that's what it is.
I'll tell you exactly what I said a while ago. You get into the 1830s and 40s, you get this romanticizing of the American Indians in literature, and Joseph Smith picked right up on it. It's
right. Right.
Geez, are they dark?
Well, yeah. You ever seen that Mel Brooks movie, Blazing Saddles? Mel Brooks is an Indian. He's captured some niggers out on the plains, and he says, "Whoa, they're darker than us."
Yeah, they went to this Indian reservation, and they asked the young brave, what is the significance of that eagle feather? He says, I've been with one squaw one time. They go, oh. So they go to the next Indian, and they said, what is the significance of two feathers? Me been with two squaw two times. Oh, they came across a chief, a big ceremonial. He says, me been with many, all of... Indian women in all the nations. And the lady reporter says, oh, dear. He says, no, dear. Ask too high, run too fast. Okay. It was an Indian joke came to mind. Oh, look at this one. This was about the fifth one in. Chinook Indian woman. She looks very monkey-like.
I haven't clicked that much. I haven't clicked at all. I'm off it.
If you go to the left, so they got some almost like... racially mixed Indian and whites.
Oh, really?
You don't have that ugliness.
I've been going to the right.
I'm going to have to go look at some redheads to get the taste out of my mouth.
Hey, speaking of monkey looking, has anybody thrown any bananas out on the FIFA World Cup soccer game yet? You know, and all the niggers. I don't know why I thought of that, but...
Hey, how about that Irishman winning the golf? I heard it on the radio.
Well, he won what?
Big golf tournament or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, you're right. Going to the left, there's some Caucasian-looking... You know, when they, Bill, when they went out, the Australoids, or the people of Australia... When they went there, they could only count to three. It was one, two, and many. That was the degree of their mathematical ability. I always find that amazing.
One, two, and many.
One, two, and many. Because after you get past two, who can count that high, you know? One, two, and many. Unknowable number of things. Oh, wow. These
crowds. Yeah, that's pretty incredible. That is fun.
Well, that, two and many. And then we spent all this money trying to educate them. What for?
Yeah, right. It's absolutely crazy. And we put them in classes with our children, and our kids don't learn anything, and we wonder why.
Oh, yeah.
No child left behind means every child left behind.
Well, like George Carlin said.
It's incredible. We're just suicidal as a race. It's crazy. We need Christ. We're done without him. I mean, believe me. If our God doesn't show his presence, we are finished as a race, because we sure as hell could never preserve ourselves. Well, we do some of the stupidest things. We fall for the dumbest Jew tricks. It's incredible.
No wonder they're laughing at us.
Yeah, I'm sure they're all laughing at us.
Yeah, we can count to the stars, but we believe those people that can count to three or two are just as smart as us.
Yeah,
oh,
right.
Yeah. This is one of the great things. I had this lady, and she's extremely leftist. And I said to her, you know, black people can run faster and jump higher than most white people, don't you think? She goes, yeah. I said, they're just as smart, aren't they? And she goes, yeah. I said, you're a black supremacist. Why did that shut her up? Then this one lady comes in. She says, well, finally we got some color in the White House. And I said, what are you, a racist? He's half white. Of course, they didn't tell her he's Jewish, but, you know. Boy, that shut her up. You just throw it right back at him. What are you, a racist?
Yeah.
You're not giving any credit to his white side? Yeah. They hate that R word. They're so programmed.
They're so programmed that they think that you're just as programmed. They
right.
take it for granted that you believe the same things they do.
Yeah, well, I really shocked crazy. A few of them. It cost me about $10,000 a year. Unfortunately. Yeah, that's how I figured out. These are customers, and if I, it's been about five of them. They spend about $2,000 a year with me. So when they quit coming in, it's easy to do the math. Thinking about it the other day. What is your business? I'm a personal trainer. Oh, so you get them in there, and then you start to indoctrinate them, huh? Oh, yeah. Well, I try.
He
you know,
chases
I do my
them
little,
away.
Yeah, and I chase them away sometimes. Yeah. About five that I can think of. That's $10,000. I have a young lady that I'm talking to, and she's Irish, tall, pretty lady. I trained her from age 17 to 20, and put off to, you know, in college, and she's going to be a trainer, and 5'10", 165 pounds, dead. And started talking to her, and she has all this self-hatred, being white. And I said to her, yeah, I said, you know what? If there was no white people, there'd be no cars, no planes, no computers, no phones, no trains. We could go on and on and on. We're really wonderful people. And, you know, I had these guys, their car broke down. They came in one day. One was kind of a hillbilly kid and a couple other folks. And I said to him, we're in there. I said, you know, I just love white people. Should have seen them. They're all terrified. Seriously, they get upset. I said, I didn't hate anybody else. I said, I just love white people. Man, they're great. Fun to be around with.
Smell good.
And when it comes to women, nobody come close unless they got some white blood in them. And even then, it doesn't make it. You know, people go, what about Halle Berry? I said, exactly what is she? Yeah.
A mongrel.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Any tree not planted by Yahweh is good for nothing but to be hewn down and cast in the fire. Those are tough words. I told that to
a quattro.
I said that to a lady one time. I never saw her again.
Yeah, well, you know what, though? It's like, I mean, I pretty much say that to the only people I don't really, you know, get brazen with like that are people that are in my own family. You know, I try to show a modicum of restraint with my own family just because, you know, I didn't ask them to be my family. They were just given to me, you know. And, but, you know, everybody else, they're fair game, you know.
Well, I tell you what, I don't have a mom and a sister talking to me right now after I sent them some DVDs.
Oh, what did you send them?
Oh, just the fact, you know, I sent them a little, about the who Israel is, how that certain things that say happened in World War II didn't happen.
I think that's it's just black, and they won't talk to you as a result of it?
I don't know. I called them. Yeah, nobody ever calls me back.
Hey, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me. I have, you know, like, my dad was a Southern Baptist minister for over 32 years. And, you know, even though my mom and dad have a pretty good marriage, they can't sit down and talk about the Bible for more than 5 minutes with me. I end up pissing them off and they'll stomp off and, yeah, that's just the way it is.
The scripture says that an old wineskin can't receive new wine.
I never had any luck with anybody with identity that didn't have some modicum of racial awakening in the first place.
Right. And I will say that I was racially aware even at a young age. You know, I was just kind of, you know, it was just a natural, it was like, you know, like even as a youngster, even though I couldn't articulate myself like I can now, I still was like, you know, I never dated a black girl or Mexican or any of that stuff, and I was very aware of race even at a young age, when everyone around me and family included didn't care. As long as you were a Christian, then God loved you too, and therefore you were equal, was pretty much their philosophy. You know what I mean?
Well, I know what you mean. My problem is I'd look at them and I'd go, whoa.
I know.
The only women that, I tell you, the majority of all the girlfriends and wives have been Irish, Scotch, and German. Irish,
yeah.
Scotch, and German. All I might have been a best largest singer. Mm-hmm. Usually Irish, Scotch. I mean, my very first girlfriend when I in first grade, like McClanahan, he had freckles and blue eyes and really dark brown hair.
That's Scotch, isn't it?
Yeah, I think she was Scotch. I got her a little silver ring. Then, then I had Barbara Egan. Was it
Egan? Egan, that's English,
Irish,
isn't it?
Is it? It's
Irish. Egan could be. Okay.
Yeah, and then. Then my first wife was Greaser. Second
Greaser?
Wife,
that was her name, or
yeah, last name Greaser.
Or that was her, or that was her ethnicity.
Maiden name was Greaser. Keep that, people. No, her name was Becky.
Becky
of Sunnybrook Farm. Her grandmother Kunke used to hit me with her cane. Her 90-year-old grandmother.
Now, Becky, not for nothing, but Becky is the one woman's name that makes me picture a cabin in the mountains, bare feet, pregnant. Becky just does that for me. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. I got this new client named Becky Schultz. Wow. What a beautiful woman. Incredibly beautiful woman. Germanic stuff.
I'm in the wrong business. I got to get me a personal training license.
Yeah. What'll kill you down here where I live though in Austin is you'll see beautiful women, you know, with some, you know, freaking non-white, you know, and it's like,
oh yeah,
it's like she could. I'm like, what's up with that? Why don't you go? You can do better than that. You can do better.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. It's just, and I got another friend that lives in Florida, and he says it's even worse there. He says you'll see white people walking around with the biggest, you know, monkey Negro, and they're pretty attractive, and it'll piss you off, especially because, you know, he's single and you know he'd like to, you know, get married and raise a family, and he sees all these women doing this. It's like, you know, it'll piss you off because.
Yeah.
You're trying to make a go of it, and it's like,
yeah, I have a great story. I was working in this health club, and the guy's name was Bill that I was working with, interestingly enough, and this lady came out of aerobics class, and we know she's fooling around with this mulatto. She was my school's homecoming queen a couple of years before me. She's a fairly attractive woman, okay? And so we're there, we're drinking this Orange Julius drink, and she sees us glance at one another, you know? And she says, well, you know, once you go black, you don't go back.
You don't
and
go
Bill,
back, right.
And Bill says, we don't want you back. You should have seen her. She didn't know what to say.
That's
he goes, we don't want you back.
We don't want you back.
I should call him up and just thank him. Whatever
awesome.
I think of that. He was so funny.
That's awesome. And you probably looked at him and went, now, oh, no, you didn't, you know.
But the thing is, this guy had the worst breath. This mulatto guy she was seeing. Now you talked to, his name was Greg. Oh, my gosh. You know, it's projectile bad breath. And I tell you. Yeah, it's getting crazy. I hate going out to the stores. I don't like going to a restaurant. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter, I was dating this light, really white looking diesel, and I told her if you ever, first of all, I said you got to quit seeing this guy, and if you don't want to do that, if you ever think about getting married, having kids, you'll never see me again. Never. I'll never have anything to do with you, kids, nothing. So she stopped. All it takes is
that usually anymore nowadays, it seems like those kind of threat doesn't seem to work anymore, does it?
Well, I'll tell you something about my oldest girl's beautiful blue-eyed, blonde-haired girl. And when I was coming home, when I was a young man, I was coming home for work, she would wait in the picture window on the back of the couch waiting for my car driving. Every day. That went on for years to greet me at the door when I came home from work. So she took me out to dinner yesterday for Father's Day.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But the fact that she even dated a mosquito.
Well, that's all that schooling.
Right,
oh,
right.
Dad's old-fashioned, Dad's racist. You know, she thinks I'm just, she loves me. Now, don't get me wrong.
I understand.
She thinks I'm wrong.
Right. Sure. Sure. I understand it, dude. You don't have to tell me. I've seen many a white family go through a lot of pain in this area. A lot of pain.
I told her about the the hoax. She doesn't want to hear about it. She wants to believe in all that propaganda about that one that did that fake book, Anne Frank.
I'm not familiar with that.
Yes, you know that. The book, Bill, what was the name of that book?
Anne Frank, the Jewess that supposedly survived the Holocaust, the famous ballpoint pen written.
Yeah.
Diary of Anne Frank.
Yeah.
You got it.
Frank. Okay, you said it with a European twist on there, and I just didn't get it, you know. The Anne Frank, and I just who's that?
Frecken Sie Deutsch?
Anyway.
That's my German blood coming out.
You gotta say it hillbilly Schweinhof, for me, you know.
Guys in the house.
I don't understand it. Yeah. Anne Frank. Yeah.
It's my German. Yeah. My grandmother used to teach me German when I was a little boy. A little bit.
Right. Oh Lord. Yeah.
Hey, remember when we had that German guy on one of the talk shows, and he threatens the commander in chief. Remember that? He died. The Gerhardt. He fought on the other side during World War II, and I had him on a talk show. Yeah, isn't he the guy that said that there's a way to make gold? Yeah, he was a guy. Yeah, he died about, I don't know, 5 months ago.
A way to make gold.
Was the old guy that you had on the talk show?
That's what I'm talking about, Gerhardt.
He didn't trust anybody. He didn't want to tell anybody anything.
Yeah, and then he blurts out, somebody ought to put a bullet. Yeah, and we all said, hey, stop it.
Yeah, that guy struck me as a little strange. I mean,
oh, he was. He was out there.
I don't know you, so I can't tell you.
His friend was CI. His friend was. Teaching Eustace. They were different. So how do you make
Well, he was an interesting character, but he was just strange. He was very hard-headed.
I'm sorry, Kent, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just asking, how do you make gold?
Yeah. I don't know. You hire an alchemist.
You paint lead.
Yeah.
You paint tungsten with some gold paint from True Value. A tungsten block, you know, give it a little nice shellac coat. I don't know. I'm just trying to be funny. Obviously, it wasn't, but, you know.
You got to suck two electrons and add a proton to every lead molecule, every lead atom, right? I don't know. I'm just guessing, but evidently you can't make gold. The alchemist could never do it, so.
Didn't reveal it to RP?
I'm sorry?
Did not reveal it to his to RP then?
Oh, probably not. RP? RP left.
I'm here.
Did your friend tell you how to make gold?
No. I think they were putting gold and silver into ionic solutions to improve your brain power. I think that's what they were talking about. No. He said that you can actually make gold with
some
formula.
Did he really?
Yeah, and then that.
Well, I'm sad to say he took it with him to the greater reward.
Yeah, because he was some and started selling it.
Yeah, I sounds good to me.
I never bought any. I'm not into gold myself, but if others are, I would be happy to sell it to them.
Well, my first marriage, she got all my gold. My second marriage, she got all my silver. So, you know where I'm at.
Well, was that you had physical gold and silver that you're?
Yeah.
And what'd she do? She just walked off with it?
My first one, yeah. And my second one, I gave her.
Okay, so you gave a bunch of it. All right.
I gave it to her so that she could go to Scotland, and then she didn't go to Scotland, and now I'm living here in Toledo, and she's living in Michigan with my youngest daughter.
Okay. So, all right, fair enough. So, because I was going to say, gold and silver is typically, it's a physical asset, and you can't bring gold and silver into court to litigate. That's all I'm saying, right? Just leave it at that, right? You know what I mean, right?
Oh, yeah. My attorney wanted to hear all about it, though.
Yeah, well, let him get a metal detector and try to find the rest of your stash. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
right?
he said, when they found out that my daughter didn't have a Social Security number, the whole court was all excited about that.
Yeah, were they now?
Yeah.
I mean, I know why, but.
They said you really should get her birth certificate.
Goodness.
She doesn't have a birth certificate or a Social Security number.
And they were just having a conniption fit. Was that tantamount to child abuse almost? Were they trying to go there?
Almost. I guess the good news was that that's probably why Rachel is with her mother.
Oh,
have you?
Okay.
I'm not trying to pry, Russ, but have you identified the influence that you think turned your wife, who spent so long with you and learning identity?
Last name's Lehman. His last name is Lehman. Lehman.
Okay.
So are you trying to say that's Jewish or what?
Yeah, that's Jewish.
Good chance.
Very good chance.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
her brother-in-law. Sister married a guy, and of course, there's absolutely no, she was CI, so whatever. She knows. She says you got to get over. There are no pure bloodlines left. I said, well, if that's the case, then our God's a liar.
Absolutely. If that's the case, then the Bible's invalid.
Yeah.
Yeah. She ate the apple. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
And
that's a good response to say to him, well, just because you ate the apple doesn't mean I'm going to eat it, you know. And they go, what? What do you mean by that? That's a good response, Bill.
you can
win over a lot of Judeo-Christians if you just give them half a hard time on the nutty things they say, right?
Well, this guy comes into the talk room, and he says, our race is a pure race. And Bill types in or says, yeah, pure shit. The guy left the room.
All right.
guy left the room. You remember that, Bill?
No, I don't. But
yeah, this Jewish guy came in and said, "We're the Jewish people are a pure race." And Bill says, "Yeah, pure shit." And boom, pure he's shit. Gone.
Yeah, pure shit.
Sorry to use the language for any ladies in the room. That's what Bill said.
Language don't want me.
Yeah. It wasn't the clown curse, though.
I always said it because it was true.
It was true. I love the clown curses. Oh.
Clown curses? All right.
You never heard Bill?
That must be an insider thing.
Well, Bill used to go, "You clown."
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
This guy's
yeah,
a clown. Yeah.
Okay,
well, I still would, but I haven't come across any in a few weeks, you know.
No, we haven't had.
And Bill, you're restraining yourself too when you say that, right?
Well,
usually yes. It's actually a mask for the things I really want to say.
LEHMAN.
I know.
Yeah,
we're the retarded. Bill, we're the retarded people, and you got retarded people.
As a people, there's no doubt we're retarded. Well, handicap ourselves with poisons and propaganda.
Well, we think everybody's just like us. We give ourselves no credit.
Right, that too.
And they've got us all convinced that we're bad people. I tell you, one of my great fun things is to say, man, I just love white people, and watch the expression on people's faces. I said, I love my family and my extended family. I like Europeans.
Wow. I really like Caucasian people. They're so cool and fun to hang around. That's true. Yeah. I never thought, and then just kick back and look at the screwed up look on people's faces when you say
stuff
like
that.
Yeah,
how could you dare to say that?
Right.
If you're white, you're all right. If you're light brown, hang around. But if you're black, what's the rest of that? Oh, well, anyway.
Get back. Right.
Yeah. Oh, let's see. Somebody knew it.
White, you're right. Brown, stick around. You're black, get back.
Not heard that.
I don't know if I like step two there.
I've heard of Free White in 21. I've heard that one, right? Not for some time, though. My grandparents used to say that kind of stuff, you know.
I'm free white in 21 a couple of times. Is that all right? No.
My grandfather, he used a step-grandfather, actually. His name is Valentine Niascota. And he used to call black people crickets. He said, "Boy,
moon crickets."
Crickets. Say,
those crickets. That cricket sure can chirp. Talking about Nat King Cole.
Right. Interesting.
All the Italians in Jersey called them moulin yams.
Moulin yams. What does that mean?
You know what that means?
Eggplant.
It means eggplant.
Really?
They call them eggplants. Moulin yams.
I ran into these two Italian guys once in in Defiance, Ohio. And they said, "Do you know that Italians weren't considered white people until 30 or something?" And I nearly said, "Well, I can't see why." No, I didn't. I'd never heard anything like that before, but these are pretty dark Italians. They weren't like, I have a friend who's Italian, and he's as white as you can possibly be.
Yeah, he's from northern Italy.
Yeah.
Well, they say Africa begins at Naples.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, those Moors got in there.
One of the downfalls of the Roman Empire was that for probably the last 100-150 years of the empire, there were no real Romans left. They had just interbred themselves out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happens to every great culture. Bill points out on his site. I told this non-Irish guy once, I said, no mixed country ever survives. And he tried to deny it. And I just started running, you know, about Egypt and Rome. And, he didn't want to hear it.
British Empire, American Empire, we're going down.
Yeah.
Well, right, but another thing that we don't look at concerning Italy is that Italy was not... It was not what, from the time that Rome fell until the 1850s or 1860s, Italy was never united.
Independent states.
Yeah, independent. You know, the South was separated from the North by the Papal States, which were more or less in between and centered around Rome. And the North was isolated for a long time from the South. And then once it reunited, that they all became Italian, and you had people from disparate races who were all claiming to be Italian.
Yeah, they spoke the same language, but they weren't the same people.
Well, they don't even really speak the same language. I mean, the dialects are quite different, too.
Well, we need to get to
just like in Germany, the dialects are quite different. I mean, the Bibles, you know, made German dialects more common, Luther's Bible. But basically, before Luther's Bible, I mean, for every valley, you had a dialect.
Huh.
Even in Germany.
Why does that happen in language? Because it's a living thing. It's always changing a little bit. Somebody says something a little different, another guy copies it, and then another person changes it a little bit.
Well, right. And today, mass media is a great language unifier, right? Or we would have a much greater disparity in dialects here if it weren't for the mass media. Which kind of pushes us all into some bland center, right?
Well, not you, Bill. Sorry, I had to do
it. If you my mother's from Massachusetts, right? And yeah. I always thought I knew what a Massachusetts accent sounded like until I went, and it was 1995, and I went to Fall River, Mass, and I met this guy that was on the whale boats all his life. He was a tugboat pilot. And all his life he was on the boats. And he talked with an accent. You think the Kennedys sounded bad? He made the Kennedys sound like they were from Chicago, this guy. and he was just, he was an older guy, maybe about 60. And he was just talking naturally. And I could hardly understand him.
Wow.
But well, the mass media has pushed us all towards we don't have that fracture in dialect as wide as we used to have because of it.
Yeah, what is it? The mass media always tried to maintain a Midwestern accent on nationalized news like ABC, NBC, and CBS and stuff like that. And in order, because they didn't want it to sound distinctly, New York or Chicago or South, Deep South, et cetera, et cetera. So
they didn't want to sound like their own, in other words.
Right. They felt that the Midwestern accent was the one that sounded the most neutral, I don't know. What do you think of that? I kind of like, I'm kind of partial to the Texas accent, but then again, I live down here, so.
I lived in Texas for a while.
You see, to me, you hardly have an accent compared to, like, a Gerald.
Right. Well, even myself, I I've had people say that to me, but, maybe I just don't sound like a redneck or something,
My mama has a southern accent.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people associate, a deep southern accent with uneducated,
that's true at all.
Right.
They do. Well, that's the Jewish media always try. They hate the white southerners. They're always pushing
hard. Yeah, right.
They have all those jokes and all that. But I, what a saying that I like, don't hate, separate.
There you go. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, why we get ostracized down here? Why we get ostracized down here is because the Southerners have consistently produced some of the most fantastic warriors the United States has ever had.
Yeah. Because they got all that Indian blood. Just kidding.
That's it.
Oh, get off.
Right.
Well, you think about it, okay? All right, at the start of the American Civil War, think about it. At the start of the American Civil War, the U.S. Army had something like 16,000 personnel, excuse me. Of all of the officers in the United States Army, virtually everyone over the rank of captain resigned and went south. Now, some of them thought that an invasion were Yankees who thought that an invasion of the South was a bad thing, and they didn't want any part of that. But the majority of them, above the rank of captain, were Southerners.
Christian men, too.
Good Christian men, Southerners.
Yep.
We're talking Robert E. Lee. Long
what a great
Street.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, he joined the army to get off the plantation. No, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. The South has always had a strong, even recently, a much above the proportion, extra proportional representation amongst our Army officers. They've always had that. There's always been an over-representation of Army officers in the South and a very strong Army tradition in the South. There's no doubt.
Sure.
But I still understand why. Fortunately, the South lost that.
Yeah.
Well, it just wasn't meant to be, you know?
Yeah. Wasn't meant to be. And
if this nation does represent Manasseh, well, then it was contrary to prophecy, right?
Yeah.
And if this nation represents Ephraim, I mean the core of English and German settlers when I say these things, then that's still... splitting it up would be contrary to prophecy.
Yeah.
Let's see. At the time of the Civil War, most of the lion's share of the white people during the time of the Civil War were English and Scots-Irish, right?
Yeah.
And then by the 20th century, the predominant white American was of German ancestry. And so, and probably here in the 21st century, no white immigrants are allowed to come over here whatsoever.
Isn't it absolutely insane?
Right.
To take what I was saying one more step, if we're neither Ephraim nor Manasseh, but the regathered 12 tribes of Israel, it's still contrary to prophecy to break us up. No matter how you look at Israel identity, end time prophecy, it's contrary to prophecy to break up this nation. It just wasn't meant to be, in other words.
Yeah,
the South just wasn't meant to win. Just like Hitler, as great as he was, as wonderful a nation and as unified a nation as the German nation was in 1940, it just wasn't meant to win. It's the way it is.
I know, that's frustrating. Spirit of God has to move through people, and Yeshua has to... Sometimes I feel it's the Spirit that's supposed to move among the people, but... The older I get, the more I think it's the physical return is the only answer.
Yeah, then absolutely.
You, like you're sitting on
absolutely.
Your hands. Bro.
Absolutely.
Don't you feel like you're sitting on your hands? I know I do.
I just hope I get to live long enough to watch the fireworks. That's what I hope. It's like, come on. I hope I get to live long enough to watch the fireworks. Now, grant you, I know we'll be resurrected and stuff like that, but, in my little mortal mind, I just want to see it all crack off. And,
Poor Joe. I mean, there's got to be one woman in Pennsylvania that'll take him out.
Joe, I'm going to have to give that guy some coach. I got to coach him up. There's some basic things you got to learn. Evidently, he hasn't learned yet. As far as getting that's never a problem.
The Indian women were starting to look hot.
A lifetime for me. I've got about a 15 to 18 year limit, it looks like. Yeah, coach him up. So everyone happily married out there? I know Bill was happily married a couple times.
Several, too many probably. I can't, I was a sinner too.
No, sir, I'm not happily married, but... Maybe I will be before I kick the bucket.
You've never been married, huh? How old a man are you, if you don't mind me asking?
42.
You've got 80 years.
Hey, I'll give it a go. I will. If I get the opportunity to have kids, some white kids, I will take the chance. I promise
you. I've been giving my kids, heck, neither one of them are in any position to get married. 31 to 33. I get nervous. I think my youngest is going to be my best hope.
Jesus. Wow, I had six kids by the time I was 33.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a vicious world out there. You know, let's just say our culture is highly degenerate, and it's not easy to make a good go. Yeah, find a good mate. Even if there's a woman listening, and I'm sure they, good godly women, aren't having a great time of trying to find a, you know, decent male either. You know,
one of my clients is a really neat lady. Shocked, not married yet.
Mm-hmm.
42 years old, 43, something like that. And she said, "Well, there's just not that many nice guys out there."
And that's true. Yep, and the older you get, the slimmer the pickings, right?
Yeah,
pretty much. And
you know, I got a friend who's a real nice guy, but he's not exactly what you'd call a catch. Okay, he's kind of emotionally and socially stunted. And here a few days ago, he told me that he was talking to this woman who's over in another town. And he said, well, she already has a couple of kids. She's divorced, and she has a couple of kids. First thing I said was, what color are they? And he said, well, they're white. He said, well, actually, they're more kind of Hispanic. And I said, well, which are they, white or Hispanic? He said, well, they're Hispanic. And I said, let me tell you something, man. I'm going to tell you one time, and then I'm going to get out of your business. But I'm going to tell you because I like you and you're my friend. Stay away from her. She's trouble. Okay, she didn't have enough respect for herself to stay away from a Hispanic. Then she's not for you. And he just, you know, he looked at me for a little bit, and I guess he took me seriously because he hasn't said anything else about her. But yeah,
huh,
I mean, there's
good job.
Yeah,
hey, good friend, job. That's all you can do. That really is all you can do. If you just keep ranting on stuff, I think all you do is really just stress yourself out, really.
And they'll turn you off.
Yeah, they turn you. Yeah, a little switch goes off in their head. You can hear it go click, right? And if you'll listen to it, you can hear it. You can just hear it go click, and they just.
Oh, you see it in their eyes.
Yeah, just switch goes off. And it's like not receiving any information at this time. Please leave a message.
No, cannot compute. You like white people too much.
Right.
Well, it runs against their programming. That's what it is.
Something's wrong with you. You really think white people are okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the number one thing in with women, I found out, number one thing is they can't have too much baggage. Number two, they got to been crazy about their dad. That's what studies show. If they're crazy about the dad, they'll be crazy about their man. Most of them, if they hate their dad, isn't good news.
Hey, you know, just to tell you what kind of fun you can have, a lot of people want to know, well, what can you do? What can you do when you see all this miscegenation? What can you do? Should you confront it? What should you do? How should you handle it? And I remember going out to a restaurant with some friends, and there was probably a party of about 20 white people around a table in this Tex-Mex restaurant here in the Dallas area, and they were passing around this little infant Negro baby, right? And everybody, I couldn't even tell where the, you know, if the baby's father was black, which obviously it was. It wasn't the black father was not at the table. So I just went, you know, and of course I was sitting there with some of my friends and stuff. And I just went up there. And I go, you know, I had to walk past that table of 20, and I just went, oh my, you know, to the woman that was holding the baby. I go, my, that is just a cute little jigaboo you got there. You know, I said that, right? I said that, and they didn't know how to. But by then, I'd already walked out, walked away. I just went, oh my, that is just a darling, you know, cute little jigaboo baby there. What's his name? And they just didn't even know what to think of it. You know, they didn't know whether to flip me off, whether to curse at me. They just didn't know.
It was a mixed compliment.
Yeah, it was a mixed compliment.
It was an iron fist and a velvet glove.
Yeah.
A cute little jigaboo.
That is just a cute little jigaboo.
Could you toss them to me? Oops.
Yeah, right. Right. And so I did it, and I said it like that. And she just didn't know what to make of it. And by the time she digested it and computed it, I was already long gone and left the restaurant, you know. But I got my point across. My point was, even strangers like me, who you don't even know from a hole in the wall, notice what you're doing, right? That's the point, right?
Yeah. And to me, once a woman hangs from the hip of a from the shoulder of a yard ape, it's too late. She's already gone. She's already lost. Chalk up another victory for Satan.
Right, and that was the point. The point wasn't to get in a scrap or get in a fight or let my emotions get so worked up into a frenzy that somebody wants to stand up and square off with me, because I'd probably just deck him and then the police would come arrest me or something like that. The point was just to get my point across and just confuse them with a mixed compliment, you know, just like, oh my gosh, what a cute little jigaboo, you know.
Well, praise Yahweh that Satan's victory is going to be temporary. All of his victories are temporary.
Right. But you should have seen the look I got from the women that were at the table right there. They looked at me kind of like a very vacant, starry-eyed, you know, confused look. Like, you know, I mean, it was really quite, I mean, they didn't know what to think. But by then we had moved on. So, you know, who knows, maybe some of the men at the table would have got up and tried to defend their women's honor, but
I doubt it.
I don't know. There were men at the table. You know how men can get. You know, if you insult their, there were women at the table. I don't know what the relations were at the table, but you know, you offend some woman. Generally, some man. I mean, it could have happened. Some man could have stepped in and. But, you know, I'm not worried about that sort of stuff. I mean, the way I phrased my words, it was so – I was very complimentary and yet
– Hey, that was very wide of you.
Exactly. That's mighty wide of you. Right. Right. That's mighty wide of you. Yeah, that kind of a statement. Exactly. Mighty wide of you. Man, people, it's like, you know, by the time they get that, and I'll do that. I use that one, too. I still use that one to this day, you know. I'll use that on my parents who just hate anything racist. I'll say to my dad, oh, Dad, that's mighty wide of you, you know. You know, he hates that, you know.
Now, he's a minister, right?
He's a minister. He's a minister, right. So you Right.
I got this Baptist minister fired from his job. I didn't mean to. I was in a clothing store, and this guy was a Baptist minister for 50 years. Well, he just started talking. He was a gentle spirit, and somehow I got on the subject of the scriptures, and he said to me, well, I was a Baptist minister, Cowboy Bob, whatever, Kuchendale or something. He was a German fella.
And so I said, Baptist ministers have stage names?
Well, this guy did. This guy had a cowboy hat. He gave me his card. I got it around here somewhere. Anyway, I said to him, do you ever use the Schofield Reference Bible? And he goes, oh, yeah, that's what I used for 50 years. I said, no kidding. I said, did you know that guy was a bigamist? He abandoned his wife and daughters, stole his mother-in-law's life savings, and when he wrote the Schofield Reference Notes, part of it was when he was in prison and being funded by the Secret Six, Samuel Untermeyer. And you know, I just gave the whole thing. And then how he got fired, he said, well, don't you think God can use something wrong for good? And I said, well, we're supposed to preach the gospel. And this guy didn't preach the gospel, and then I proved to him who Israel was, and I, because he knew the Bible, but it had never been explained to him. I said, well, remember the promises to Abraham to be a great nation, a company of nations, and all these kings would come out of his loins and the number of his children. And I told him about the day would come that my people would be known not as my people, yet sons of the living God, they'd be known as Christ's sons. And I said, that's all these countries in the Western Europe have Christian crosses on them. He said, my sheep would hear my voice and follow. I said, well, and I, you know, told him about Revelation 2:9 and 3:9. Boy, he, you know, his cage was rattled. And then I brought him in, a thing I had kind of put together, but I also brought him in Star Wars by Nord Davis. And I left it there. Here, I got this for you. Well, evidently, his immediate boss must have came across it. And, you know, on the cover, it has the Star of Molech and five-sided Star of Israel. And I haven't talked to him since. But at least he knows what gospel's about now.
Huh. I'll be darned. Yeah. I mean, I always try to, you know, if anybody will sit and listen to it. But I find that when I talk to Judeo-Christians, I mean, I find they don't really just know a whole heck of a lot about the Bible, really. You know, like I just got home from a music class. I take, you know, bagpipe class, and there's a minister.
Oh, cool.
There's a young guy in there. He's trying to be an ordained minister in the Presbyterian denomination. And I could go up there and talk to him about the Bible. He just doesn't know anything about it. You know, and this dude's going to be a minister, an ordained minister, and get a paycheck for this, right? And he hasn't got a clue what's in the Bible. Not a clue.
It's all about taking one scripture and putting your words to it, not the words that Yahweh has given us. See, that's what Bill does. Bill gives us the word as it was, you know, the literal word. And
Right. Just pull it up. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, he is a young guy, so I haven't tried to be confrontational with him on that, because, I mean, it doesn't take much. You know, you just pull out a few CI stuff, start discussing the Bible, bring up anything racial and not politically correct, and you're automatically confrontational.
I asked these people, I said, why does it say in your Bible, beware of those who say they are Jews but do lie, they're the synagogue of Satan?
That's good. Maybe I should just frame it as questions for a while.
Yeah, frame it as a question. Why is that there?
And in other words, don't try and offer an answer. Just say, hey, could you get back to me on that? Right.
Yeah, because he's saying, oh, you're studying.
Oh, yeah, you're really getting at it. Yeah, Revelation 2:9 and Revelation 3:9, what do you think of that?
What's that mean?
What's that mean?
Yeah.
I don't get it. Right. Yeah. That's good. That's a good approach. I mean, that's the whole point. And I feel like I got, you know, some halfway chance with some of these Judeo-Christians of, you know, maybe turning the light bulb on some of them, right?
Yeah. I always say this, a man changed against his will is of the same opinion still.
Yeah.
If you I can crush him. I can crush him.
Right.
Bill is a nuclear attack. I slap him around a little bit, you know.
Right.
But, you know, you can crush him, but then what happens is they don't like you for it.
That's what I find.
And they won't receive it.
No, they won't. They won't. You're right about that. Yeah, because I can just dominate on him and slap him around and push him down and treat him like
Word education comes from to educe, and Bill, tell us what educe means. Come from within, doesn't it?
It's to persuade somebody from themselves, from their rationality. That's the way I see it. I don't know.
Educe.
No, it's almost like you educe, right? You're not deceiving them.
Educe. There's deduce, deductive reasoning. Yeah, well, the you have to make them think it comes from within them through the questioning.
Right. That's good. I'll try that sometime. Now I can't do that with my dad, because he's been a Southern Baptist minister for over 32 years, and every single question I bring up, he knows I'm angling in on him. Right? He knows me too well. Right? He knows I'm trying to angle in on him. Right, and I'm trying to corner him. I'm trying to checkmate him on something. You know, he knows, right? So he won't do it.
Well, you know, I I've asked them. Jesus, Yeshua said he came but for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Was he lying? Was he lying? Do you believe?
Well, who's no, no. Well, who is the lost house of the sheep of Israel?
Yeah.
You know what's funny?
The Living Bible translates that. I came only to help the lost sheep of the house of Israel.
Lousy flying SOBs ought to be horsewhipped.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
Wow.
Ought to be taken out. I told one of my clients once, all these evil people that are destroying the people, and these people that run the phony baloney system, ought to be just hanging from telephone poles. Or you just go down the street, just everywhere you go. It would be a good
Paul
thing.
Paul talks about the sake of systemized deception. That's why they do it.
Yeah, they it's the Matrix. Seamless. Hey, I got to get up early for work, guys. I'm going to go. See y'all later.
Take all care, right, Russ. Hey, bless you. It was
yep.
a pleasure.
And, hey, we're good.
Take care, man. Bye. Take care, man.
Yeah. Huh. Well, you know, so much for my, you know, confrontational endeavors with Judeo-Christians who are reluctant to be converted, right?
Well, we all have those problems. I gave up a long time ago, and yeah, you know, I'll talk to my family just to because I have to give them an opportunity. But other than that, I'll only really talk to somebody who gives me a glimmer of racial awareness in the first place. Because if it's not there, you're never going to be able to deal with them on a positive basis.
I hear you on that because, you know, like I said, my family is my family because I was born into it, not because I chose it. But that doesn't mean I have to do that. I have to be like that with everybody. I show a great deal of tolerance towards my own family because,
I actually show less tolerance towards my own.
Oh, do you? Do you? All right. Fair enough. I'm not saying I'm, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that my family's, you know, got it all together because they certainly don't. But I'm just saying that I find myself not showing a whole lot of patience with just the average, you know, traveler out there. You know, it's just like, okay, you know, I hear a few political correct things and degenerate things come out of their mouth, and I gotta be honest. I'm like, okay, well, have a nice day, see you. You know, I'm done. You know, so I don't know, man. You know, I know you're supposed to get out there and evangelize, but I gotta tell you, you know, sometimes I just don't have the patience, because I find that like throughout my friends, it takes years to convert somebody, years, you know, you've got to really work with them and be friends with them, or they just don't come around. And it's like, you know, if we're supposed to be the salt of the earth, I mean, it's like, I mean, at the rate I'm at, there ain't enough time, you know, so I got to be real selective. Because there's not enough time at the rate that I can help, that I can, you know, be some type of a witness or whatever you want to call it, right? I don't, you know what I mean, right?
Well, yeah, I don't think that we need to evangelize. I think that period is over. Somebody either gets Christianity or they don't. What they need is the truth about it.
You might be right. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you might have to dispute the evolution thing with them for a few minutes, or different angles on that, and the Big Bang, which is just bunk, and I could dispute those things with anybody, and if they get it, they get it. If they don't, they don't. You lay it out for them, and if they get it, they get it. I mean, it takes 10 minutes. It takes 10 minutes for me to debunk evolution to the average man, And he either understands what you're saying or he doesn't. And I'm not going to try to persuade him that I'm right, because he's either going to understand it or he's not. And if he doesn't understand it, well, now beat it. Go away. Beat it. Scram.
Right. And I am getting more and more that way. And it's like, You know,
but I had a guy that was I debated a guy a few times that was he was actually a he was a real rocket scientist. He worked for the Navy Weapons Lab and got his ass in trouble and ended up in prison for 3 years. And he was an astrophysicist and I had him on evolution. He couldn't talk to me anymore. He couldn't talk. He just gave up. He uttered surrender and said, I can't talk to you anymore. But he wouldn't believe in, he wouldn't accept Christianity. He knew I had him cornered on evolution. He wouldn't accept Christianity. So it was like, beat it, scram. Yeah, you know what you are. You're a devil. That's the way I look at it. If you could be defeated with logic and you still can't accept Christianity, you are, I think you probably have a genetic problem, even though it may not be evident.
Right.
But I have
right.
no other way to explain it.
Sure. I mean, I don't. That's as good an explanation as any, because some people, they just dig in their heels and they just will not, and they willfully refuse to give you an answer on, like, Revelation 2:9-3:9, and, you know, and I have not to. I mean, they they get angry about it, you know, so I don't know what to say.
Well, you have to, you have to approach people with the evolution thing or wherever they're coming from in the mainstream, simply because they have to have the opportunity to think about those things and overcome their programming, because they've all been programmed.
Right. Yeah, we've all been programmed. There is no question about that. I mean, we've all been, subjugated to, you know, years of this. I mean, how long is this Judeo-Christianity? I mean, the word didn't really come into our vernacular till around the 1970s, but certainly the idea of Judeo-Christianity is much older than that, right?
I think the word first started appearing in literature in the 20s or 30s.
Oh, did it? Okay. All right.
Yes.
Fair enough. Okay.
It just didn't make its way into all the denominations and become accepted for a long time.
Get popularized, right? So to speak, right? That term, I mean, that term I thought came into our everyday vernacular somewhere around the 1970s, right? Which is, incidentally, is when a lot of the modern English Bibles seem to proliferate, you know?
It's also when Hal Lindsey got loose, too, in the early 70s. Started the, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, Hal Lindsey, the late great Planet Earth, and end times prophecy guru, and, yeah, he's done a lot to influence and mold people's religious attitudes here in North America.
Pollute, mutate instead of influence and mold.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe, no question about that. He's a real piece of poop, that guy, that's for sure. But he doesn't think so, you know. I agree with you. But he has had a profound impact, just like the Scofield Bible or the Ryrie Study Bible, or you know what I mean, right?
Well, right. Oh, but you know, if you know enough scripture, you have to realize that if you're teaching the truth, it can't ever be popular.
I think you're right. I think you're on to something. If you're hated and people hate you and people can't sit down and talk about stuff, the Bible, for longer than 15 or, 5 minutes with you, then you got to know you're on to something, you know?
Well, Luke 6:22. I mean, why? Explain Luke 6:22. Blessed are you when men hate you and cast your name out as evil for the Son of Man's sake.
Right. And if you look at today, most organized Judeo-Zionist churches out there are 501c3 tax exempt status churches, and they're not teaching anything that's not approved, acceptable by the government, really. If you really think about it, that's what that tax exempt status means. It means that the government approves, and I know that's hard for for people to believe here in America, that, you know, the home of the free and, you know, home of the brave, land of the free, or whatever you want to call it, but you know, they couldn't possibly think that, you know, we have a state religion. Well, if you're a tax exempt religious institution, you are a state institution. Would you not agree, Bill?
Well, that's, they've co-opted all religion. That they want to be able to control everybody. It's all about control. They want to fit everybody into this new world order. That's what it's about.
That's why the Mormons straightened up and started letting non-whites into their congregations, despite decades being opposed to allowing non-whites in. It's because of their 501c3 status.
Right, because they were going to get it revoked if they didn't. And that was the same thing. Do you remember Bob Jones, the Bob Jones University back in the 80s?
Yep.
That? They tried that, and they were going to get their tax-exempt status, and they got it. They got it revoked, and then Bob Jones came back and said, oh, we've reconsidered. We think black people are cool now. And so, because they realized they were going to get their institution shut down. That was a display of the federal government saying, you will conform to a multiculturalistic attitude and a Jewish interpretation of the scriptures, or you will not practice your religion here in North America. You will be shut down. Do you understand? And they said, yes. Do you comply? And they said, yes, we comply. Okay. Well, then you can open your doors and you can practice your religion as long as it conforms to multiculturalistic Israel first ideology. Otherwise, you will be disbarred, dismissed, right? That's how they treated them, you know?
Yeah, separation of church and state, my ass.
Yeah, that's how they treated them. And they,
well, the Constitution is only, you know, an instrument of lip service now. It hasn't been in effect in over 100 years. It really was suspended with the war of Northern Aggression. But the Federal Reserve, I think, did it in for good.
Right, right. And now, I think we live in really exciting times now, because We are gonna see not the Great Depression, we're gonna see the greatest depression of all time, and it's gonna be global. And I for one am excited. I think people will get, white Christians out there will get more family oriented. They'll become, more, you know, they'll start to become unplugged out of the grid. And mind you, there'll be a lot of pain and misery, but the people who come through it will be much better for the wear, and get in touch with things that matter in life. And you know, and that's family, that's Yahweh, that's you know, your heritage, your people, your community, and getting off the grid, being more independent, and stop getting into debt, into this Jewish usury system, and I do think that those days are coming. So I'd like to see it personally myself. I hope so. I think maybe you're right, Bill. Maybe there is no political solution that'll just, you know, sweep a bunch of change in, in front of us. But nevertheless, I hope I get to live long enough to, because I think I'm going to live long enough to see the economy collapse. I think we all are. Everybody in this room is going to live that long, right?
Well, we all hope, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's cool. But, you know, I think we live in exciting times. As long as you can stock up on food and take care of yourselves and look out for each other and stuff like that, I think we'll be able to just kind of kick back and watch the show, don't you think?
Well, I don't know if it'll be that easy, but I'm sure that what we have to trust that if we are doing the right thing, that we won't be harmed by the beast. That's the Christian hope, right?
Right. That's the hope. Is when the beast gets hungry, we're not part of the diet. Right. I agree. Yeah. I'm kind of excited, but I'm ready to get it. I'm ready to, you know, I'm sure with everybody in this room, they're ready to, you know, let's go, let's get it on, let's go, let's get it moving. You know, it's not moving quick enough for them, but I honestly think by 2012, man, we could be well under. I mean, look at this crap that's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. They ain't getting that thing capped. That thing ain't getting capped. Fishers all over the place, you know, freaking mile under the Gulf of Mexico and talking methane. I mean, that thing ain't getting capped. I'm not trying to be a fear monger or anything, but up in Alaska at Prudhoe Bay, you know, the hole they drilled up there had 1500 psi, and they were pumping that all the way down through the Alaskan pipeline to deliver oil to the lower 48. And out there in the Gulf of Mexico, they're experiencing 75,000 plus psi, and there's fissures all over the place, and they ain't getting that thing capped. It just ain't gonna happen. If that thing stops leaking, it's gonna be because God closed it up. You know, God said, "Okay, that's enough," and He closes it up. You know, and that's once that gets into the Gulf Stream, if you'll notice, it's gonna go all the way up to the eastern seacoast and all the way into Europe. It hits all the predominant white Western countries on the planet. I mean, is that happening? What is that? Is that a coincidence? What is that? I don't know. I don't know what happened. I can't predict the future, but.
Well, we have to trust that Yahweh's in control.
Yeah,
we
absolutely
have to put our trust in Him. We sure as hell can't save ourselves.
Absolutely, He's in control. I mean, of course we can. I mean, I had nobody else in this room had anything to do with that hole in the Gulf of Mexico, and yet it's going to affect our lives. So, we didn't have anything to do with it. But, it really makes you wonder, you know, about we were trying to dig into the, you know, Revelation and try to understand some of the prophecies in chapter 8 and 9 and stuff like that. But Revelation, I never really did understand Revelation completely. I've tried and tried and tried. It's just a very difficult book for me.
Hello, Bill.
Hello.
You're going to turn into a pumpkin if you don't get to bed
by midnight tonight. I don't know if I'm going to make it. I'd like to be, but...
You'd be spitting seeds, huh? Pumpkin seeds.
Yeah, why don't you guys hold this down for me, and I'm going to go walk my dog. I got to do that, and I'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Good. Who else is talking?
Boxer's talking. Who's this?
Munica.
Oh, Munica. Okay.
And I'm trying to see who else is an Eighth Day Woman. No, I guess if they got an X on their microphone, they're not talking or they're not there.
Yeah. If anybody else wants to talk, go ahead and jump on up here. Don't be shy now. Don't be shy.
Goodness.
I'm here.
Who be here?
I am.
Oh, okay, Victor. Okay, hi.
How you doing?
Well, terrible. About as bad as last time.
That's
room
good.
For improvement.
That's good. Yeah.
Most people say, "How are you? Fine." And you, fine. That's a bunch of nonsense. The cash register wants the money. Give it to me. You know, they don't really care how you feel. It's just almost like perfunctory stuff, like a handshake or something. It's supposed to make it okay. I was going to ask Bill some questions about the wedding feast, but it's getting late for him. So maybe I'll ask him next week. I got a real good view on that, but I don't want to try him in too late at night here. I was hoping to get it earlier, but the conversation didn't go that direction. So, I'm looking through some old Life magazine. What's that?
What were you going to ask him?
Well, I was going to ask him about the wedding feast. I had a question about how it all panned out there and why it was the way it was. Last week I had a pretty good zinger, but this one might be about as good.
Oh, right.
Last week I questioned they usually call it the parable of the talents, where you get a master or a boss gives money to his servants while he goes off and claims some land, you know.
The prodigal son thing?
No, that's not the prodigal son. That's parable of the talents.
The talents, you know. One servant buried.
Right. So, one invests, one buries it, etc.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of took that apart and together a little bit different than what Bill looked at it as. And I think this next one, probably next week I'll spring it on him. It'll be about as interesting to see how he approaches it. But I guess I'll have to wait for next week. In the meantime, I'm looking through some old Life magazines online. And who is this now? There's a picture here. Oh, Dizzy Dean is shown grabbing some guy. In the baseball field, the box seats, you know, real close. And I guess he's been heckling Dizzy Dean, it says. So Dizzy Dean goes over there and grabs, and he's about ready to pull him out of his chair. They got a picture of it. The guy's going, wait. I think I'll have to put that somewhere. Dizzy Dean busted. Okay, so I got to save these two pages here. But I put a lot of these pictures online in the Mein Kampf and Image Gallery, and they're pictures more from the German view of the war. There's fewer of them now because the Japanese war got started. I'm out about October 42 now, and there are not a lot of German pictures anymore. There's a whole bunch of them earlier, but once the Japanese came along, all of a sudden they're sort of ignoring the Germans. But there's a lot of pictures in there of Life magazine at that time, from 1936 to, well, up to 40. I think it's up to 42 now, which is, so it's all propaganda and how they word it, things like that. So I'm going through right now. I'm looking all this evening while I was doing that, while we're guys are talking. And I'll put some more up later. But it's, if you get a chance to go to his Mein Kampf site, and then on the right side, Image Gallery, you'll find a bunch of them there. And it's the Life magazine propaganda, World War II propaganda.
Yeah.
And then I'm putting some in what I call the temporary files because I have to move them up into the big one. But I want to be able to look through them to find things so that I can make corrections. Otherwise, there's already 1,000 images almost down there now. So I want to kind of keep them separated a little bit until I can get this straightened up.
Yeah, you got a World War II site going, do you?
Yeah, it's on Mein Kampf, right?
Uh-huh.
Get there and any of the websites he's got there. Click projects.
Who's got there? William?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. You, are you on Christogenia?
Christogenia?
Yeah.
Genia?
It depends
potato,
on your concept,
potato.
You know. Yeah, that's about the way it is.
Jalapeno?
Are you on that website? No?
No, I'm not. I'm not even sitting at my computer, to be honest. But I've been there many times, so I've got a mental picture of it in my head.
Okay. Then you'll find those pictures there.
Okay. So you're saying just go to his Hitler site? His Hitler
project
site? Yeah, the
Mein Kampf. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough.
And then the Image Gallery, it's right in there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Have you contributed images to that?
He's contributed most of them.
Yeah, they're almost all.
Oh, okay. Oh, cool.
All the Life magazine articles we have on Munich to thank for, and probably most of the other ones.
Cool. Well, those are cool.
He was emailing me images and got tired of them never getting posted, right? I just set him up with an account, and he started posting them, because I don't have the time to do everything.
Right.
I didn't know where he was going to put them anyway, but it was convenient. It was kind of interesting that it worked out that way. And So he set me up a image gallery, and I just put them in there.
Oh, awesome, awesome. So where do you get all that stuff? Is this just periodicals that you've saved over the years, or?
Well, these are from Life magazine. Right now it's all Life magazine online, and they got the old editions online. So I just go through page by page looking at them. Found one here.
Are you a collector of Life magazine or something?
No, well, two pictures, timely pictures of, it's not exactly the German view because I don't know how to read German, and there's not a lot of magazines left from the war. Just Life magazine and how they looked at the war. And I came
some of them are pretty important because there's one that you know, it talks about preparing for, it's my personal favorite, for war against Germany and Japan, and it's dated for 1938, November 1938, something like that.
Yeah, there was a lot of pictures in there. When you look through them month after week after week, you know, they came out weekly. They had been preparing everybody for war for a long time. More and more you'll see from 1936 when they first put it online as far as the images anyway. They started in 1936, and you could see little by little more and more they talk about military things long before the war. And pretty soon they're showing these airplanes. Other people used to make the medium-sized airplanes. Now they're making fighter planes and tanks, you know, instead of cars. And these guys in Army uniforms and Navy and Marines and stuff like that, and how they're practicing for just maneuvers. And they just slowly increased the fervor and the clamor for war to the point where every page has something about war, and war hasn't even started yet. And when they had that one there, it says how they're preparing, and it was 1938. Well, how did they know?
Why would a guy from India sign up for the Christigenia Forum and he misspelled William?
He's a Hindu.
I don't think he's going to make it.
You know, these two Hindus are arguing over something, and they couldn't come to a conclusion. So they went to the each said, well, I'll have my friend to decide. No, that's your friend. I'll have my friend. No, that's your friend. So I said, I'll tell you what. Go over here to Abdul, you know, that he's a Muslim. So they talked to Abdul, and he listened to each story, and he made a decision, and they accepted it. And he went back to their friends, their Hindu friends, and he says, what happened? You guys used to be fighting, now you're friends. Well, we went to Abdul, and he solved the problem for us. We asked him to solve it, and he did. Well, he's a Muslim. They hate us Hindus, and we Hindus hate the Muslims. How could you do this? He says, well, that's true, they said. He is a Muslim, and he doesn't hate us, and we hate him, but we know they would give us an honest judgment because he hates us both equally.
Gentlemen, I have a long day tomorrow, so I must call it a night. Yahweh,
yeah, I'm not
all
far
of you
behind
here.
You, Victor. This is going to be over by 12:30, I think. I mean, the forum's open all night, but I'm tired, too.
Yeah. Everyone have a good night.
God bless.
See you, Victor.
Take care. Next
Thank
week.
You. And good night. It's been great.
Bill, next week I'm going to have to spring this the idea of the wedding feast and my interpretation on you. I wasn't going to do it this week, but the conversation never got that direction.
Did you ever go to my listen to my parables relating to race?
I can write it down again to make sure. I don't know if I've listened to it or not. I probably have it on the desktop here somewhere.
Yeah, the parables relating to race. It's a Yahweh's Covenant People program I did last June or July, maybe, and I think you might want to listen to that.
Let me look on my desktop here.
And my notes are actually on that radio program on Chris in the archive. I have a PDF link to my notes there too.
Parables relating to race.
Yeah, because the wedding feast parable is all about race.
Yeah, I've got a PDF here. Notes, yeah. 19th. Okay, and you even got the link to the talk shoe. Okay. Yeah, I've got that here. Mustard seed, net,
goats, king of heaven.
Translating loop. Now, translating loop is all I see it's highlighted in green for what you want to. Okay, yeah, that's
well, I use highlighting in my notes to stress it. Yeah, you know, to remind me of the important points I want to get across.
Okay, so this is directly your notes. Okay, yeah. All right, you know, I probably downloaded that somewhere. My find over here is probably one of my folders. There's so much stuff on my desktop here and the computer that I got to go through it, straighten stuff up.
Well, my point is that you would have a hard time convincing me of any other interpretation of the parable of the wedding feast, but for the one that I have elucidated in that recording.
Okay, I'll listen to that. Now, do you have it in here? I'm looking for it here. I don't think I see it in the... Here, there's a marriage feast. The marriage feast, okay. One pager, okay. But that's mostly quoting things. Okay, so this I'll listen to it and see. And then I'll throw this out at you and see what happens.
Yeah, most of my comments aren't in those notes, you know.
They're just prompts, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I sent you a box last Thursday or Friday. You got to follow the instructions.
Yeah, you told me that. I'm expecting it.
Don't jump too high. The ceiling's only 8 foot.
This ceiling isn't even 8 foot.
Really? Well, you give yourself a haircut just walking through it, huh?
Yeah, it's about a 7 foot ceiling here.
Really? Wow. So between you
and I got about 7 inches clearance, right?
Yeah. That's all you need.
I got a bedroom. A few beans.
It's a big bedroom, Bill. Hey, this is Bruce. How are you? Hi, Bill.
Bruce, how you doing?
Yeah, Municher. How do you say your name, Municher?
Municher. I got that from a book that I had sent to Bill. It's in fact, it's online in my Gentle Cynic website. I have the original book published in 1939, and it's a photo essay and a commentary about Munich, which is like the birthplace of National Socialism. And I knew that Bill had his Mein Kampf site up there, so I saw that. And I finally dragged out this really rickety old scanner, and I just scanned it in and did the best I could. And originally when I had it on there, it was 127 megabytes or something like that, and it took a year and a half to upload, download to the computer. So I divided it out now into like 9 parts, which is quicker, is faster to upload it and get the text and the pictures and things like that. But it's Munich of Hitler's time. It was published during Hitler's time. It's got the regular, the Nazi imprimatur, like we officially approved this document. And they got some interesting risque pictures of the girls on there, little drawings, stuff like that. I'm rather surprised to see it. But it talks about how the kind of people that are there. I think people of Munich are a little slow to pick up anything new, but once they do, they stick with it. So it's interesting. So I got. He said, "Well, you need a moniker to get out. Don't need one, but it helps." And I just chose Munich because it just happened to be the book time I was talking about. And that's why I am the way I am.
Is it in English?
Yeah, it's in English.
Mm. Wow,
that's the amazing part.
That must
and
be a
I
rare
think I
book.
Got it from a late. What's that?
That must be a rare book.
I think so. I haven't looked online for it yet, but it is. It's a general original. In fact, I have the. I scanned it in color. Yeah, I scanned it in color. Now it's sort of a beige page, but the cover is an interesting one. The rest of it, you could just do it in black and white and make a smaller size file, I suppose. But yeah, it is rare, and I think the lady that got it is the same woman that had the German songbook that I have on that website, just below, I think it is, the Munich book. And there's some German songbooks, and of the time, the 1936, I think it was. I got several books from this one in an old library book sale, and I just happened to look at it. And I don't know who else got the others, but I got about 4 genuine National Socialist type of publications. Another one on there is Germany Speaks. You want to understand National Socialism as it was intended to be. Germany Speaks is one of them, and that's a big book. And all the leaders of the various departments and the ministries, they call them, they put in their word as to what they think it should be. And there's some little booklets down below there, like German Labor Service and things of that nature, that discuss the National Socialist views. And you could hardly find anything wrong with them. It made common sense, made people participate. But it also, you look at the results, it was obvious that things got better.
I don't know if Adolf Hitler, I know he was He was proclaimed Man of the Year either twice or three times in the 30s.
yeah. By Time Magazine, you mean?
Yes, sir.
Yes, he was.
I think so. I have some images of Himmler and a few others, but I'll have to look and see in Time Magazine what they have for him. There's a website, a Time Magazine website, along with the Life Magazine. I'll have to open up this, put another tab in here. You know, like, go down here, Life Magazine cover archive, okay.
Now, they must have published something about, you know, what he achieved in Germany with his with the German people, and they must have had something documented. And
I have
yet to see it. It would be very good to make a video or something.
I don't think it doesn't indicate he was necessarily Man of the Year, but they have him on the covers. If you go to http://, type in search.time.com.
Oh, okay.
And then type in Hitler for search results type in Hitler, and you'll find that there's a 1933, 31, 33, 36, 39, and 41. Those are the ones that present him, at least in an image, well. The others are 45. We've got a big red X through his face, and the forgery, and then some other thing about good and evil. But there's five of them. Those are the Time covers. So I don't know if it's Man of the Year or not. In 1933, I'll click on that one. Just has... look at it again. Okay, it's not bigger. It doesn't say Time Man of the Year, I don't think. It would just have, I can't quite read it because it's sort of blurry now when I enlarge it. But it shows Adolf Hitler. Actually, some of them are paintings and some of them are pictures, photographs, you know. Let's see, two of them are like paintings and two of them are photographs. Third one, I think, is, where did it go? I must have clicked it back on the wrong page. But that's how you can find Time magazines, all the covers. But I don't know about Man of the Year. It's a good question.
Papa, can I only have a 7-foot ceiling because I'm in a basement? I'm a bottom feeder. I'm a bottom dweller.
Yeah, well, he's got his friend with his dog.
Okay, I'm going to end the recording. If that's about it. And that way maybe I can get to bed by 12:30 because I'm tired. I got to keep early hours. I got to try to keep normal hours this week. I'm going to down around the Philadelphia area on Wednesday just for an overnight. Bob Ashton, I'm going to see Bob Ashton. He interviewed me once on the ProSync program. Maybe some of you remember that. I'm going to see him for Wednesday and Thursday and coming home Thursday night.
You go. Okay. So
to you people that are left, thank you, and that's it. This is the Chris DeGhenny Open Forum program, and I'll see you next week.
So, Yahweh bless, Phil.
Yahweh bless, yes.
Praise Yahweh.